Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing about sports for the duration of the show. Sorry about last week. A very last-minute thing that ended up happening. I ended up going to the New England Revolution game on Saturday, so I didn't really have much of a chance to put out a bit of a notification. Lou, I do know I tried to get a hold of you. Did Alex end up getting that message to you?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
And Lou got the message to me.
Okay, great. That's what I was hoping, Diane. I was hoping because I tried texting Lou, and I didn't know if he got my text at all. So I tried channeling the message through through Alex, and I ended up going to see a great game, 3-3 tie. It ultimately ended up in between the New England Revolution and the Chicago Fire, and God knows I was about 12 beers deep and maybe a vodka or two.
I thought you were going to a Red Sox or Celtics game.
No, I wish. Red Sox, I mean, Red Sox,
what's
they were away. Soccer.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to a soccer game, the New England Revolution, at Gillette Stadium. Yeah, but they had it was a pretty loud crowd for a soccer game at a football stadium. I got to tell you, it was a pretty loud crowd where I was sitting. I rewatched some of the stuff on the television portion of it on Apple Plus, and my God, I think either they hyped up the volume on the television broadcast, or we were really damn loud. But
probably both.
Needless to say, though, it was a great experience. I did get to see the new scoreboard that they're putting up at Gillette for in time for the Patriots games. Don't know if it's going to be finished, but Lou, it kind of reminds me of the Dallas Cowboys scoreboard a little bit that they have at the end zones. Where they have it, at the end zones where it, like, sort of wraps around.
I know exactly what that is.
Yeah, so it's it was definitely obviously the thing is not finished yet. They're still working on a few bits of it, but you know, part of the scoreboard itself was actually working. But yeah, we are back tonight. We are back this week. We do have I have last week's list that I was going to bring up, and we also have a whole bunch of stuff from this week as well. We have the Stanley Cup Finals that are underway right now with a 1-1 tie between the Florida Panthers and the Vegas Golden Knights, off of goals from Stanley Cup veteran Eric Staal and Stanley Cup newcomer Jonathan – or actually, no, he isn't a newcomer. He played when Vegas played their first year, Jonathan Audie Marchessault.
Right.
Tied up at one apiece. And
I can't believe they scored that first goal, though. I can't believe it.
Yeah, with Eric Staal. It was a shorthanded goal, too.
That makes it even worse.
Why?
Yeah, that actually, it does make it worse.
Yeah, you don't expect, you know, a team that's, you know, well, then again, look what the team has done all year. I mean, nobody expected even them to get this far. I mean, first you beat Boston, which had to be the most incredible upset in Stanley Cup history.
And, you know, now the Phillies are playing the Golden Knights and holding their own against that.
Right, and especially especially the thing too is it's in Vegas too for this game one.
Yeah.
So it is it's in Vegas game one here, and you know the one thing I said on your show earlier today, Lou, was a real determination of this series of how this series would go would be how game one starts out. If Florida can keep their momentum going with an early goal, then it could potentially be, it could potentially be a short series. However, though, Vegas did respond. They did respond with Jonathan Marchessault's 10th goal of the playoffs. He's become quite the go-to guy actually for the Vegas Golden Knights in this playoff run. So. It should be very obviously, you know, we're just through one period right now, but there's still a lot of stuff that has to take place. Let's bring in Alex. Alex, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hope you had fun. It's been a great game so far, man. Good to see Lundqvist on the intermission report as well with the guys. Yeah, Dubrovsky is looking awesome, and then they got by him, got one past him, and then Hill's been stepping it up. Both goaltenders, I think, are playing pretty well. It's been a good battle so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree. You know, the one thing that I noticed before Vegas got their goal was they tried doing one of those ticky-tacky sort of goal attempts where, you know, they would do like multiple dekes and try to squeeze it in basically on the right side, technically it was Bobrovsky's left side of his net, but on the television screen it's on the right side, and that may have worked against Vegas against Dallas last series. That's not going to work against Bobrovsky.
No,
Bobrovsky, he has a great way of tying up loose parts of the net, so basically squeezing himself completely in.
Yeah, he's got cat-like quickness too. I mean, he's one of the superior goalies. I mean, he's right at the top of the list. He's looking awesome. I mean, no goalie's infallible. So 1-1, it's going to be a great game tonight. Either way, it's been really, really even. Both teams are going hard so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's start with you on this, Alex. Who do you have taking this series? We've already seen one period so far. Both teams, it seems like for the most part, well, Panthers outshot the Knights 9-7, but Panthers technically, I don't know who you could give the edge to when it comes to experience, but in terms of the hardest road, you could say that the Panthers had the hardest road to the Stanley Cup Finals compared to Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to – we were talking about it a little bit before the show. You always have great insight on hockey, and just like Lou and Diane and everything. But, I mean, Dubrovsky's got to be the edge right now. I mean, I always go back to – it's like soccer. And like, I was a lacrosse guy back in the day, coaching and playing.
Right.
It's those sports, man, the most important person in the arena is the goalie. And if you have an awesome goalie, I mean, I give Florida the slight – I give Florida the slight edge just due to Dubrovsky. Really personally, Vegas has been awesome. But then, I mean, looking at the streak that Florida's been on, it's sensational too. You know, they don't care where they're playing, home or away. They're on a serious winning streak, and they have an absolutely elite goalie. So I have to give them the edge. I think it could go 7 games, but, you know, money on the table, I got to go with Florida.
Let's go over to you, Diane. Obviously, your Devils were eliminated in the second round after beating the Rangers in round one. How do you see this series going, Diane, with Panthers and Golden Knights currently knotted up at one goal apiece after one period. Who do you think has the edge?
Panthers.
You know, I would kind of agree with that. And going back to what Alex said, really the number one thing you have to look at is who has what could be a key factor is who has the edge in net, because it's like they say, defense wins championships. And you know, I'm a Bruins fan. I go all the way. I go back to 2011 when Tim Thomas basically stood on his head during the Stanley Cup final run they had that year, and he bailed them out of so many games. I mean, obviously, you know, you can have all the offense and all the defensive players in the world, but it's ultimately the goaltender that is responsible for keeping pucks out of the net. So
crucial.
I got to tell you, you know, it's very hard to choose between Bobrovsky and I believe they have
Hillsman tonight, I think. Yeah, Hillsman.
Yeah, Hill. Yeah. Yeah, I think Aiden Hill is in that tonight. Who, by the way, just a little tidbit. The Bruins, you know, I want to talk about players that the Bruins passed up on. This is another player the Bruins passed up on in the year that he was drafted. Instead, taking Daniel Vladar, the pick right before Aiden Hill. And Vladar is, of course, now a backup goaltender with the Calgary Flames. But, you know, he's still a good goaltender himself. But the fact that the Bruins could have had a goaltender now competing for a Stanley Cup is just really, really irks me a little bit.
With the knife in a little bit.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Who are they going to play for?
Aiden Hill, who currently is with Vegas, let me see, who did he get? He got drafted originally by the Arizona Coyotes in 2015. Then he spent a couple of years in the Arizona farm system. He was actually a player for the Springfield Falcons for a couple of games, actually, as well.
Who are they?
I forgot about that.
Of the AHL.
Okay. Yeah.
They're now. Basically the AAA of the NHL.
Okay.
And you know, it's funny because my friend and I who are both Springfield, or we used to be Springfield fans. We don't really go to the games anymore, but we were discussing former Falcons that are actually in this Stanley Cup series, and Aiden Hill, I literally just found out, is one of them. I know Jonathan Marchessault had a stint with Springfield, but I completely forgot that Aiden Hill was on Springfield at one point, coming out of his junior career.
I love it. I love seeing that, man. For every guy that goes like straight to the top, you know, straight to the big leagues, there's so many guys that grind away that could be 24 or 31 or 29 that make it into the league. I mean, I love those stories. Aiden Hill story, obviously. You're a Boston fan. You don't love it as much, but it's cool to see guys that really plug away and work at it and finally get. And now the guy's playing the Stanley Cup. It's remarkable.
Yep. He spent, let's see, 6 years with the Arizona Coyotes organization before going to San Jose for 1 year, and then he joined Vegas this year. And actually, you know, he did have some NHL experience previously before this year. He spent a certain amount of games over about 4 or 5 years with both Arizona and San Jose before he ended up becoming a Golden Knight this year. So it's not like this is his rookie season. You know, he's been in the NHL before on different stints. Like last year he played 25 games for San Jose. The year before he played 19 games for the Coyotes. The year before that he played 13. He was basically like one of those guys that they would call up if they needed to replace somebody in net. If a goaltender went down with an injury for a lengthy period of time.
Taxi squad up and down. Yep.
Yeah.
Here he is. Cool.
I just thought that was pretty interesting. I didn't notice it until now. But you know, it also helps too that he has a 2-time Stanley Cup winner as his backup goaltender, Jonathan Quick. You know, Jonathan Quick, along with Alec Martinez, who actually won a cup. Alexander Pietrangelo won a cup as well with the St. Louis Blues. They have a couple of cup winners on the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, that know how to win, that know what's expected of players at this level.
It's like the Kraken, and some people are saying, "Oh, that's a new team. They don't know." Well, obviously, other players migrated, got signed, got drafted, or you know, other players have been in the big dance before. So, an expansion team, you know, they can have plenty of guys who've been in the big spot before. So, I mean, Vegas is playing really well. I don't know. I give the slight edge to Florida personally. It's a 7-game series, I think. It's going to be awesome.
Should be.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be a 7-game series. I would be very surprised if, because it's not like this is a Denver Miami matchup, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's a completely one sided affair. These two teams are pretty evenly stacked up. I'd say maybe if anything, the experience edge maybe goes to Vegas, because they have more players who have actually been in a cup situation. But at the same time, though, you know, you still do have you kind of wonder, you know, does youth trump experience? Because we all know the type of grinder. What's that, Lou?
Experience always triumphs over youth.
True, but at the same time, though, you know, we do have a situation here where, you know, you have a grueling run to the Cup final.
I'm endorsed.
So you know that there's going to be wear and tear and whatnot, and ultimately, it's basically a battle of, you know, who can outgrind the other.
Yes.
In this situation.
Classic war of attrition. Last man standing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a battle. And, you know, fatigue.
Exactly.
I mean, we weren't born yesterday. These guys, naturally, I don't care if they're Schwarzenegger. These guys have been skating a lot of miles, a lot of games, a lot of nights, a lot of battles. You know, it's grueling. It's grueling. These guys are getting tired. This is the end of the road.
Exactly. So the thing you do have to wonder is, you know, does fresh legs overrule that? Like, if you can have somebody out there, I didn't mean to lay that up.
I'm still, you guys are definitely more the hockey aficionados, but as far as, you know, in playoffs, basketball, you know, when you have a longer series, right? Football is grueling.
Right.
It's also once a week. These guys are playing every other day. So God bless them.
Right.
They get on average skate 14, 15, 16 miles a night. They're losing teeth, and 5 minutes later, they're back on the ice. So these guys are battle. These guys are guard and battle
tested.
So, when on your point, Steve, that made me think, I mean, yeah, depth has got to be very key, especially in the Stanley Cup, because these guys, again, obviously they're playing another 10, 12, 14 days of hockey than the rest of the league, again. So the third line and the fourth line comes into play. You know, the deeper team is going to have a big advantage because a lot of guys are getting very tired.
Yeah, and, you know, this is what kind of makes me think that maybe perhaps Florida might have the edge here because they are technically the younger team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
When it comes to, you know, they may not have as much experience, but they're the younger team when it comes to having fresh legs out there on the ice, when it comes to, you know, how much longer are their players going to be able to stay out there as opposed to Vegas's players who are getting up there in age.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Petrangelo is in his 30s.
And these games, I mean, right now, if one of us on the show, one of us four were behind the bench on one of these teams, I mean, you know what I mean? It's such a battle. You're tempted to play, like, your top two lines and run them into the below the ice. Like, you got to go and you got to use four lines at least a little bit. Definitely got to use three lines. You know what I mean? It's tempting to just run your horses until they run ragged. But, yeah, the deeper team in a long, grueling series oftentimes can win.
Well, let's get your thoughts on this, Lou. Who do you think has the edge in this series between Vegas and Florida?
I still say it's the Knights. They've been the best team all year, and, you know, they have pretty much, you know, breezed through, like, most of the competition. So I'd still give it that. I mean, I will give the Panthers credit for what they've done. I mean, you know, nobody expected to get this far at all. I mean, I'm still shocked myself that they even managed to beat, you know, the Bruins, which was a big shock to everybody. But I think they're going to run out of gas here. I mean, you know, they get to show why they've been the top team all year.
Great matchup.
Yeah.
Not for nothing over in Fox. Dodgers is going.
Ooh, really fun.
And another thing, too, is, you know, Paul Maurice has been to the finals before. He went there with Carolina back in 2001-2002 when they lost to Detroit.
Oof.
Oh,
but
right.
They won back.
Wow.
So,
yeah,
Paul Maurice.
I'm assuming Detroit was actually good in those years.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Okay.
That's right.
That's back when
you had like Yzerman, Datsyuk, when you had all the big names.
Mm-hmm.
It
wasn't the huge heavyweight primetime names, right, for the two matchups, the matchup, but this is a good looking series. I mean, they're two very evenly matched teams. It's more of a hockey, you know, real hockey fan series, but it's a great series nonetheless, either way.
Oh.
Yeah, and trying to look at the playoff scoring leaders here for this year's playoffs. Right now, it looks like in terms of, well, no, but I'm talking about those who are remaining right now.
Oh, sure. Okay.
In terms of
top of the ladder.
Yeah, actually, believe it or not, he's third in terms of overall. In terms of overall,
yeah.
Connor McDavid, in 12 games, Connor McDavid had 20 points.
That's insane.
Wow.
Sorry to pull you
right
off
now,
here,
though,
you
for the
current players. Who's atop the mountain right now?
Right now, those who are still remaining, Matthew Tkachuk is on top with 9 goals, 12 assists, 21 points. And let's keep in mind, this is in terms of who could potentially win the Conn Smythe Trophy, the playoff MVP.
Yeah, wow.
Matthew Tkachuk is on there. The next nearest active player is Jack Eichel, 12 assists for 18 points.
That was a great trade.
For the Vegas Golden Knights. Oh, yeah. I said this from the very beginning. As soon as Vegas got Jack Eichel, I said that
super
could
talented.
Be the one piece. That could be the
yeah.
one piece. If he can now, of course, he was undergoing, experimental
yeah.
back surgery. He was undergoing experimental
yeah.
back surgery, and I...
Sensational talent, yeah. yeah. If you can recapture that, like, he's got the looks, like, he's not a McDavid, no one is, but he's an absolutely elite offensive player. And he's turning it back on, man. He refound his health, thank God.
Yeah, and I had said that if he could at least be anywhere close to the player he used to be with Buffalo, then they
yeah.
may have found their missing piece. And this year, 27 goals, 39 assists for 66 points, 67 games played.
Yeah.
It's better than a couple of his years with Buffalo. So, you know, he's not exactly back at that 80-point threshold yet. But,
no.
you know, he's starting to show who he was in
yeah.
his later years with Buffalo.
Yeah, there's certainly shades of who Eichel used to be, which is great to see. And that was a controversial – it was a risky deal. It wasn't controversial, whatever. It was legal, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, there was a lot of risk involved.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess it was a little controversial as far as Vegas pulling the trigger because they had to give up a substantial amount. But, yeah, he's an elite talent. And you're right, he's not back to where he was. But, I mean, few players are. But right now he's making a huge impact.
And also with his goal tonight, you can throw Jonathan Audi Marchessault into the Conn Smythe yeah. conversation as he's now up to 18 points.
Wow!
But I
That's
think
pretty
one
good.
Other
pretty
person.
Good players here.
Oh yeah, yeah, they,
yeah.
We got some. We got there, you know, this is the type of talent that you would expect for a Stanley Cup final. You know,
yeah,
you want the best players out there on the ice. And, I'm going to be perfectly honest here. Just looking at the two lineups,
yeah.
I would take Vegas's – this is so weird. I would take Vegas's lineup, but I would take
oh.
Florida's goaltender.
Makes sense, yeah. Oftentimes when you look at two teams that are close, you know what I mean? Because – Since a goaltending edge is so big.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's, but, yeah, man
right.
to man on the ice, not between the pipes, it's a different story.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's so weird, but and that's speaking of goaltending, I think you need to throw Bobrovsky into the Conn Smythe candidacy talk.
Why not?
Because – one would argue if it wasn't for Bobrovsky playing the way that he's
yeah.
played in this playoff, the Florida Panthers do not reach the finals.
Yes. No, I'm saying, like, why shouldn't – I mean, they should throw him in. But, you know, like, why not throw him in? You know, he has, you know, done what he's supposed to do, and I think he's a very worthy candidate for Conn Smythe.
Well, I mean, their other goaltender, Alex Lyon, wasn't really doing much in the games that he played against Boston. So – you know, at this point, at the hole that they were finding themselves in, it was like, okay, you know, we don't want to get eliminated this early to just be like, oh, we were lucky to make it into the first right. round. You know, let's bring in Bobrovsky and hope that the extended time off that he had. Let's remember he didn't play for a full month. Because of the huge run that Alex Lyon went on to get them into the playoffs. And now we're seeing what good that month off did for Bobrovsky, because look at how he's playing. He's putting up absolutely stellar numbers in net.
It's a great matchup. It really is. You want to
yeah.
see two evenly matched teams. You can't always have you know, you can't have Lemieux and Yager. You can't have, you know.
No, those days are over.
Always have a star-studded lineup. You know, a lot of fans, oh, but the Nuggets. Look at how good the Nuggets are. You know what I mean? Different finals. You're going to have blue-collar matchups. These are two really evenly matched teams. It's a great Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And, you know,
because we're not going to have, you know, the Mews and the Yagers on anymore. I mean, those days are gone.
You're right, Lou. And it's tough because McDavid, like you guys have always astutely pointed out, and like I'm getting hit with, you know, the McDavid now is not on a team that's good enough. So it's like you're not going to have those teams with – you're not going to have Jordan or Kobe and Shaq. And in hockey, you're not going to have, you know, even Messier and Leach or the great Devils teams or the Flyers teams, the Legion of Dooms. I think there's a lot more balance around the NHL right now. What do you guys think? I think a lot of the best players are spread around a lot more now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very hard to find that super team for the NHL now.
You're not going to see the same team go to like three or four finals in 5 or 6 years, at least from what I'm
seeing.
No,
this is, you know, this is
the last half decade, I haven't seen it.
Oh,
yeah,
what a hit. What a hit, my face. That was like a clothesline.
I think that's great for the sport.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're not going to see like the Islanders or the late 80s or the Oilers or even Pittsburgh.
Sure.
So
yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Those days are long gone.
I think it's good. I think the parity is good. I know it sometimes sounds corny to say that, but, you know. You don't have a lot of teams that are going to be the Kansas City Royals or, you know, a total, you know.
Right.
And granted, the Royals, you know, won somewhat recently, you know, with Hosmer and Sal Perez. Maybe not the best comparison, but you get my point. With the salary cap, spread of talent, I got sick and tired, you know, at least growing up, I was very young, but watching Jordan and Pippen every single year. And then, you know, you can go to different sports. I think people overall appreciate when there's more balance, and you honestly, the first day of training camp or the first regular season game, when you really don't know who's going to win it, makes the season and the playoffs really exciting.
All right, to be fair, though, you are going to get those – you are still going to see those spurts of, you know, time after time where maybe we'll see another Tampa Bay Lightning run. Did where they won two cups, or maybe another run like the Pittsburgh Penguins where they won two cups, and
good
or
point.
Tampa, you know, making it to what, three straight Stanley Cup finals or something like that.
They were pretty darn close to it. Enthusiasm a little bit there. You're right there. Tampa was pretty darn close to being pretty dominant, but again, not as much. Lou said, that Oilers is like a plateau. I don't think you'll ever see an NHL team like that. I don't even know the stats.
I don't know.
In front of me, but when they're, you know, they were beating teams 6-1 in the Stanley Cup games, and they were just smoking everyone by far.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're not going to see. You're not going to see a team like that ever again. You're not going to see a team that's going to make a run for multiple Stanley Cups within a certain time frame.
Just with the Oilers again, like, and beating other really good teams by like 3 or 4 goals every game. They were just running circles around people.
Yeah.
I mean, the closest you got to that was Boston this year. And I mean, they were miles ahead of everybody.
Injuries.
And ultimately injuries and stupid coaching decisions. Let me scratch that. Defense and injuries are ultimately what led to their downfall this year.
It's snowballs. Once you get a couple injuries, then the coach maybe panics a little bit, and then, you know, when it rains, it starts to pour. So it kind of set in motion a little bit of disarray, and they lost the confidence. And then, as you guys know, when the underdog smells blood and they start winning more and more, they have no fear. And you know, Boston was suddenly on the ropes, trembling, and they got knocked out.
Yeah.
Right. By the way, speaking of we were talking about the Detroit Red Wings earlier. Speaking of Detroit Red Wings, their former coach, Mike Babcock, He is expected to be named the new head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, according
good
to
luck.
Aaron Portsline of The Athletic. And also Darren Drager from TSN has also corroborated this report as well. Saying he is expected to become the new head coach in Columbus, but the holdup in making the move is due to his former deal with the Maple Leafs, which doesn't expire until the end of this month. So
technically
they can't because he's still being owed money by Toronto, even though Toronto released him or they fired him. He is still being owed money by Toronto, but because of that, they can't officially hire him until his contract is officially up, which will be at the end of this month.
Interesting.
He last coached back in 2019-2020, a.k.a. the bubble year, where he was let go by Toronto after a sluggish 9-10-4 start to their season. But, you know, he did win a Stanley Cup title back in 2008 with the Detroit Red Wings. And overall, over parts of 17 seasons in the league, he is considered to be one of the more decorated coaches in the league right now.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, yeah, I think that could be a good hire. They have some work to do, but overall, from a coaching perspective, I think it's a solid move.
I'll tell you one thing: it's better than having John Tortorella as your head coach. I mean, Tortorella. I don't know why they thought that was going to work there in Columbus. Considering he hates the media.
Some sophomore intern from like some blogger from like Massachusetts, or like some like 19-year-old. You know, with her first job, and he just, like, screams at her in the locker room. The guy's, like, such a combative, argumentative, aggressive person. That guy can hit the road. I can't stand that guy.
He is arguing. That's a problem.
And now, you know.
Yeah, like, literally berate people. He's a degenerate. I don't like Tortorella at all.
The difference here, though, is that Babcock does have a history of working with younger talent, and that's what Columbus is full of, is young talent. So it is possible, you know, maybe perhaps he can do what Jim Montgomery did for Boston and what Bruce Cassidy did for Vegas this year, is get the younger talent to rise up.
And
maybe perhaps
you pointed out.
Yeah.
I mean, as you and Lou's done a great job as well as far as entertaining and educating the listeners too, building up to this hire. I mean, Columbus, they have that incredible opportunity to add a really good rookie. So if you need the right coach,
right?
It's almost like Monty Williams, NBA, not to swivel over to NBA, but similar, where taking over a young program, you need a coach that really gets the best out of young players.
Right, and actually, let me look right now. Where do they have? So Columbus, they have them picking at number 3, and it looks like they may get Leo Carlson from the SHL, which
I was reading about.
That would be actually
yeah.
that
the
would
SHL.
Actually be the perfect.
Okay,
team.
Where's the SHL?
The
league.
Swedish Hockey League.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, basically in the SHL, you're playing with men as opposed to playing alongside players of your own age.
Right.
So it might be considered better. Would that be considered better than like a Michigan versus Yale, like a final, like top Division
One
American hockey? Yeah. So he's ready.
Yeah.
Oops.
I mean, you know, they just got Johnny Gaudreau last offseason. They signed Patrick Laine to an extension this season. So adding a player like Leo Carlson That could be your top line of the future.
Oops.
That could be your 1-2-3 punch of the future, basically, for years to come.
And ask any I don't know about you guys, but if my team's in the gutter a little bit, you want to build through youth. And if you get a coach that can really tap into that young energy, I mean, in 2 or 3 years, they could really be a force to be reckoned with.
And he's mm-hmm. been referred to, by the way, as a blue chip prospect.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Got to start somewhere. Build through the draft. Blue chip is almost like a can't miss. It's almost like a Kobe or a Aaron Judge, but it's considered the top out of all the coaches and scouts in the country that, and in the world that scout the different sports. Blue chip is like 5 out of 5
like
stars.
Almost like a guarantee.
Yeah. The best mm-hmm. of the best. Like, this is almost, it's the most dangerous word, but potential and the most dangerous phrase. Can't miss. Like, this guy cannot miss being a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Well,
he's like the cream of the crop.
Yeah, it's like mm-hmm. To give a comparison, back when Taylor Hall and Tyler Sagan were being put out there as choose between Sagan or Taylor Hall, and a lot of scouts had Tyler Sagan pegged as a blue chip prospect.
Wow. Yeah, that blue chip is like, wow, Vegas goal, boom. Yeah, blue chip is like literally the top.
All right.
The one that all the scouts, everyone wants that person. That's like the person that's going to be the best draft pick, blue chip.
Mm-hmm. Almost like it's a guarantee, like a burn in the hand.
Mm-hmm.
If you got it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, if they can get that to happen, I mean, wow. You know, he would really be the 1-2 punch that they're looking for out there, or the 1-2-3 punch, I guess you could say, the combination that they're looking for out there in Columbus. Then Columbus hasn't had that since the Rick Nash era, I think. Which,
wow.
I mean, let's be honest, they haven't really been that competitive since Rick Nash left for the Rangers.
That's right.
So, now Vegas is up 2-1. That right there, obviously, we're going to see how potentially Florida can tie this thing up, because one thing you got to say is this game definitely is, even though it's a 2-1 lead right now,
it's not over.
This game is not over because we've seen Florida come back from deficits with ease in this Stanley Cup playoff so far.
Certainly have.
But just one last thing about Babcock. I feel that if they're hiring Babcock, he's been in a rebuild process before. He had to go through that with Detroit. And, you know, Columbus must really feel like they're on the cusp of potentially breaking out if they've hired somebody like Babcock as their next head coach, because I highly doubt at the age of 60 that he would want to go through a long rebuild again. But
yeah, especially at the age of 60.
You know,
Big Popovich is starting over at Popovich is about 104 years old. Now he's got the number one pick as the Spurs.
No,
now
only 102.
Sorry, Lou. I digress. 102. But, yeah, now Pop is ready to start life over now with the number one pick. But, yeah, 60, I mean, let's look at, though. I mean, thank God with health and everything, we all want to all live long lives. So I think it's pretty cool lately. The last 10 or 12 years, there have been a lot of coaches stick around a lot longer. I think Larry Brown kind of started that one. But there have been some old, really old NHL coaches too, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, 60's not that old. That's maybe that's the point I was trying to get at. That's not, you know.
Older than I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'd go 65, 70 is, yeah, that's, you know, it's time to hit the beach somewhere in Florida. But now you see more and more coaches sticking around. Buck Showalter, you know, Big Papa. There's coaches in every sport.
Right, right, right.
Some other coaching changes. The Nashville Predators, they have fired head coach John Hines with a year left remaining on his deal, and they have now hired former Florida Panthers interim head coach and current assistant of the New Jersey Devils, Andrew Brunette. Brunette had basically switched over to the coaching aspect of hockey after he retired back in 2012 as a player. He eventually served numerous roles in Minnesota before he joined the Panthers as an assistant coach. He was named the interim head coach after Joel Quenneville had to resign in response to the sexual assault allegations against the Chicago Blackhawks, which Joel Quenneville was a part of at that point. However, Florida, instead of keeping him down the stretch, which gave him a President's Trophy, he was the manager of that President's Trophy winning team. And also he was nominated for the Jack Adams Award, but instead Florida decided to go with their current coach, Paul Maurice, as their new head coach. Brunette, though, did find a home this year on the New Jersey Devils bench, running the team's power play, which ranked 13th in the league during the regular season. He now inherits a Nashville roster that still boasts a mix of star power and a healthy number of young players on the rise. As far as star power, he's got players like Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, Juuse Saros to play with out there. However, though, you know, one would say that Nashville is in kind of a little bit of a semi-rebuild maybe. Maybe they're on the cusp of being a full-on rebuild.
Dangerous.
I don't know.
They got to choose one or the other. We all know slippery slope. You either got to be rebuilding or not, or else you're going to be stuck at the eighth or ninth or tenth seed for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, because the thing is, they're stocking up on draft picks. They're stocking up on draft picks.
I think you're kind of hinting at the answer then. Stocking, then I would think they're quietly rebuilding. They're just not going to announce it. They're stocking draft picks. They're rebuilding.
Yeah, they're stocking up on they're stocking up on draft picks. But the thing is, they don't suck bad enough to be top 3.
Also, Steve, just to add your point, also think about it from a PR standpoint. Now, social media all over the place. Gone are the days where we're rebuilding now. Look at us, we're gonna suck, and then the stadium is empty. So they're quietly doing it behind the scenes. But it seems like quietly they're rebuilding.
Yeah, that's what it kind of seems like. And as far as John Hines goes, John Hines, it looks like he could be a contender for the New York Rangers head coaching job, with the Rangers letting go of Gerard Gallant this offseason. So Hines may not find himself on the outside too long.
The revolving door in Madison Square Garden, what a joke. Yeah. 85 big name forwards, not really any defense, and seriously. I mean, how many coaches have they had since the magical run? It's been way too many.
Yeah.
It was almost like a deserved smack in the face. I'm almost glad the Devils, because they keep doing the wrong thing. You can't build through high priced free agents. I mean, look at look at Patrick Kane. Now he's at 6 to 8 months. Just stupid stuff like that. Sorry to dive right into the Rangers there, but, you know, you have to be better than that. You can't keep changing coaches. That doesn't work in any sport.
No. Yes.
Right. Yeah, you do bring up a good point, though, because we were talking about rebuilding, and you can't really build a team with just free agent signings. I mean, yeah, you can, but where is it going to get you? Because, I mean, take a look at – go over to the NBA and you take a look at the Golden State Warriors. Did they build through free agent signings? No, they built
Clay,
through the draft.
Draymond, Steph, Clay, Draymond, the big three. And I would get bet a pretty dollar right now. Oh, Iggy, back in the day, Iguodala. Yeah, 85-90% of their best players, 80% of their rosters normally winning those rings, homegrown talent.
Right. I mean, they did get Iguodala through a trade, though.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, they did get Iguodala through a trade, but most of their players were homegrown.
It's like Gary Payton Jr., yeah. Second-round pick. Kevin Looney, love him or hate him, kind of like a C-plus player, but a role player. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, the big three. So, yeah. I mean, the history doesn't lie. Facts don't lie.
Yeah.
A lot of best dynasties, at least, grow from within. They grow organically. They build through the draft.
Right. I mean, they do have a pretty good player coming up in Joaquin Kemmel. He obviously is not ready yet for the majors, but he probably will be soon enough out there in Nashville. So, you know, they do have some intriguing talents coming up the pipeline, but the problem is they're not NBA ready as or NHL ready as of yet.
Yes.
But
if you look at it, are they trying to win a cup in the next 12 months? Probably not. So I don't. We all see how that goes. Don't rush someone if they're not ready. Give them another year. I mean, that fits their timeline perfectly.
At least
2 years out, and then you know he'll be even better after another year of kind of growing on the minor league level.
Right. Now going over to the Washington Capitals and sort of sticking a little bit on the whole coaching sort of aspect here. The Washington Capitals, they have named Spencer Carberry as their new head coach. And in particular, the thing that's sort of odd about this one is that, let's keep in mind, he is a first-time head coach. And he has been signed to He's been signed to a 4-year contract.
Yeah, I guess Steve Nash is still a thing, right? Kind of throw it out there.
You don't see that.
Never been a
coach. Your coaches.
That's ridiculous. That's absolutely a terrible contract. I want to know more details, but right away I can already kind of smell that it doesn't smell good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense that, you know, they already have big enough players to where, you know, they can sort of mask the fact that the head coach is a rookie.
Steve Nash.
I mean, when you have players. No, but I'm talking about
let's have a big brother. Let's have a former player or a guy who's never been a head coach. That doesn't work, Steve. I mean, I'll be surprised if it works. You need to get the experience before you become a head coach.
Yes.
Well, to be fair, though, he was an assistant coach for a couple of years under Sheldon Keefe in Toronto
with the Toronto
Maple Leafs.
That's huge. That's a lot different. I don't even think Steve Nash coached in NBA 2K. So, yeah, there's a definite difference there. I digress a little bit there.
Yeah, but still, though, that's still a pretty hefty contract, even though he may have had assistant coaching experience.
Yeah,
this is a pretty hefty deal to give to a first time head coach.
That's a big 4 years. And now again, what is it for the people investing in your team? The owners are doing that. I mean, why give him 4 years? He doesn't deserve it. So like, what is that? Hey, you want to prove that you're worthy to run my team? Here's a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal. 4 years is a little bit weird. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? That's kind of a long-term deal for someone who hasn't proven it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing too, is you want to talk about a rebuild. Washington may soon be heading on a rebuild. They may soon be heading towards a rebuild. When you take a look at the state of their team, you know, they ended up giving away Dmitry Orlov to the Boston Bruins at the trade deadline. You know, they were basically, they didn't make the playoffs. They were selling off pieces at the deadline. And Ovechkin's not getting any younger. Backstrom's not getting any younger. Nope. So
yeah,
they could be, this could be the start of a rebuild, or it could be maybe Washington feels like they have a chance at one more run. But I would think if they felt they had a chance at one more run, they would have hired somebody like Bruce Boudreau, who has all the qualifications of a veteran NHL coach.
Yeah, Boudreau is more the pedigree, but yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's a dynamic there, right? Because Ovechkin's not getting any younger. Maybe they think this guy's the next really hot young coach.
Yeah,
maybe they didn't want to miss out on him and still try to win one more with Ovechkin. I mean, look at Ime Udoka over there in the NBA. Not to keep cross sporting it, but you know, at certain points, if they fall in love with the coach that they want to give the job to, Ovechkin doesn't have to get in the way. They have to make them work together. So, because Ovechkin's not going to be around forever, maybe this has the future. Maybe they can make both happen at the same time.
Possibly.
It's a risky
now,
move. It's a risky move. Like you said, they could have gone with a more prestigious name who's been in the trenches more. But maybe this guy is popular amongst some of their players too. So, you know, there could be some stuff behind the scenes that we don't know about.
I mean, he could be. You know, there is a reason the position that he held he was an assistant. I don't think he was the associate coach. The associate coach handles the power play.
Hey, it's behind the bench, man, on an NHL team. That's pretty damn incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Either way you slice it. So he's been in the trenches before.
Right. Let's see. Some other two other tidbits before we move over to the NBA here. The Pittsburgh Penguins, they have named former Toronto Maple Leaf general manager Kyle Dubas as their president of hockey operations. And boy, as if nobody saw this one coming. I knew this as soon as John Henry fired his general manager in Pittsburgh, I knew immediately Kyle Dubas was at the top of his list. Especially with the rumors going around that Toronto might get rid of Dubas. I knew it immediately as soon as Henry fired Hextall.
Lou, you know
that.
But
this is the one guy he's going after.
Yeah, I get it.
Lou, what do you think of that move, Lou?
Anything you can fire Hextall is okay with me.
Ronnie, be good.
And not just that, they also got rid of Brian Burke, too.
Yeah.
So they also got rid of Brian Burke as well. So So basically, Dubas now faces the impossible task of deciding how to get the Penguins out of their aging, mediocre state, which may include, and I can't believe, you know, that this would even be a thought, but This could include getting rid of Evgeny Malkin or Sidney Crosby.
Wow.
Are they going to win it next year with either one? I would maybe move. If you're going to move one though, you got to move both. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Because if you're
going to
rebuild,
you can't half-ass
a rebuild. If you're going to pull the plug, you got to pull the plug.
Yeah, but this would almost be like. This would be almost like the Patriots with Crosby. This would be like the Patriots trading away Tom Brady when he had years left on his deal. Now, granted, the Patriots didn't trade Tom Brady. Tom Brady left on his own accord.
I would not.
But this would be what the equivalent would be.
I would never. I would personally never break up Malkin and Crosby. Ride that until the wheels fall off.
Right.
Because you might spend three or four, God forbid, if you have three or four number one picks, you're getting fired before you even make those selections. But you would be damn well lucky as hell if you hit on one or two of those that became close to the player either one of those are. You know what I'm saying? No draft pick is going to be as good as them, maybe in the next 10 years. So, like, I keep skating them until the skates go rusty. I would keep them on my team. That's just my team.
Yeah, they're generational
talent. Exactly.
Yeah, generational talent. You let them decide when they want to move on.
And they're not rocking the boat like LeBron did a couple times. Or there's been hockey players too, but you know what I'm saying? You cannot move on from those guys because you're probably not going to go back to the well and get the water as good as that. No matter how many picks you have, good luck finding another Sidney Crosby. Might take another half a century. So keep him until he wants to leave.
Right. And also on the other side, going to Kyle Dubas's former team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, oh, my God, did they take a gigantic back step, in my opinion, here.
Yeah.
Getting rid of Kyle Dubas only to bring in Brad Treliving, the former general manager of the Calgary Flames. And, my God, if you want a guy who doesn't know how to construct a team, you bring in Treliving.
He's your guy.
Okay.
You got a number.
And not just that, let's keep in mind, you have two of your best players who are pissed off that you got rid of Dubas to begin with, in Matthews and Nylander. You have big-name free agents like Ryan O'Reilly hitting the market. There's also the talk of whether or not Sheldon Keefe will return as head coach or not, considering that he was a Kyle Dubas guy. I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs, they're another team that may potentially be in flux this offseason.
Well, Steve, as you and Lou were hitting that on the right nose stop, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Toronto, ridiculous. They were shuffling the deck after what Lou and I and Diana thought was a really great year. So, I mean, why are they now suddenly hitting the reset button? That makes no sense. In Toronto, I don't know what they're thinking.
I mean, this is a guy who watched last offseason, watched 200-point players walk out the door of the Calgary Flames when Johnny Gaudreau left in free agency for Columbus and Matthew Tkachuk forced a trade to Florida where, I mean, you know, many praised him for landing Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar as part of the deal. But, oh, what a huge goal by Anthony Duclair. Florida's right back in this. The problem here is Calgary took a noticeable couple of steps back.
Yeah, of course. I was just going to say for fun, I got a five-team parlay. I hit the Yankees and a couple other games today. We're rooting for the Braves right now. Big
buzzer.
Wow, there is no five hole in on Aiden Hill. Holy
no,
hell.
No, he closed it up. He closed the bank up. He closed the doors early.
No, he closed it way too late, actually.
Oh, actually, yeah. No, you're right. That was a terrible analogy.
He closed it way too late.
I said it the wrong way.
My God. All right, he should have just walked over to the side of the net and just let him put it right in.
And wave the blockers.
That's
like,
how wide open
he
was.
Come on in. Come on, guys. Everyone's welcome. Come on in the net. Lemieux. There we go.
But, yeah, with this Treliving guy, many praised him for landing Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar from Florida as part of the deal that sent Tkachuk over to Florida. But Calgary, even though they got rid of Gaudreau, they let him walk in free agency, and they traded Tkachuk, and they land Huberdeau and Weegar. But Calgary took massive steps back in terms of competitiveness this year. And that's what led
proud
to Treliving being fired.
Yeah. Proud franchise, too. It happens. Hold on to the wrong people too long. And this is what happens.
Really?
And now there's the possibility that he may be on the side, he may be on the verge of another massive potential trade this offseason, this time with Toronto. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a Toronto fan, you better damn well hope that you're on the right side of the deal this time. Otherwise, this could be a very messy offseason for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, you could say that the future of this franchise hinges on this offseason.
Of course. And it's been a pivotal offseason. As I was pointing out a couple weeks ago with you guys, I thought they had a historic run. Let's not totally inflate the thing, but they had a damn good season. They overachieved. They overshot their mark, their expectations. And now you're going to start tinkering and maybe blowing it up. Absolutely ridiculous front office moves right now.
Now, heading over to the NBA, talking about coaching hirings, the Detroit Pistons, they have agreed with Monty Williams to a $72 million contract over six years with incentives, it could be worth as much as $100 million over 8 years.
Okay.
Well, when you're the Pistons, you overpay.
That's right.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that for when Lou said okay.
I wasn't aware of how much it's outlandish.
It's outlandish. Well, it's crazy that they give him that much, but I think he's the perfect fit for that young core. They got a really good young core, and they have a high pick in the draft. They could be. I know the Magic. I always toot their horn nonstop. It's probably annoying, but they're on their way. The Magic will be in the playoffs next year. Detroit's kind of on that timeline, about 2 years removed. So Detroit's like 2 years from being a bubble, like a playoff team. And Monty Williams is a great players coach.
I was not aware at the time I wrote this that the amount was not disclosed, but that must have just came through then.
Wow. Yeah, I mean,
It came through a couple of days ago, I think, actually. But this is according to The Athletic.
The deal went through, but I wasn't sure about how much it was. That was not given by I was doing the show.
Oh, I hear you, Lou.
Right.
I hear you.
Okay.
Overall, it's a lot of money, too. But, yeah, no, I know that's why you're reacting that way. I totally agree with you. Overall, I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch. Hey, you know, no one's exactly, you know, moving from South Beach. Spoelstra's not leaving. Name a couple other top coaches. Are they looking at Detroit? So, like, you get a guy who's suddenly unemployed. I mean, Nick Nurse went to go with Joel Embiid. Philadelphia's a pretty nice, well, not the nice city, but bigger market. You know what I mean? No one's really rushing to Detroit. So they had to overpay, and overpay they did. I think it's a good move. They had to do it, and they paid a pretty penny.
That cost you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, honestly, it's just astounding. I mean, I understand, you know, Williams's track record, but at the same time, you know, you take a look at the team that he's inheriting, and the one thing that sticks out to me is, okay, he must be willing to, you know, he must have agreed to some sort of growing pains a little bit with the team. Like, okay, you know, I will stick through the growing pains of having to, you know, maybe deal with a couple of setbacks, having to deal with a couple of players, like maybe they don't progress well. I'll be willing to deal with that and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to me, Steve and Lou and Diane. And now, I'm looking at the depth chart right now, right? So players coach, I know that I kind of beat that annoying drum a little bit with Lou earlier in his really good show this afternoon, but you will be hard pressed. At least I'm not going to say the best young group of talent, but I think the biggest group of high draft picks in the last 3 or 4 years by far is Detroit, along with Orlando. So they have Killian Hayes, Australian guard. He was 3 years ago. He was a lottery pick. The jury's out. But then you have Jaden Ivey, who was awesome at Purdue. He had a really good rookie year. And then I mentioned on Lou's show earlier, Cade Cunningham is really awesome. He's a former number one overall pick. He missed almost the whole year. Then they have guys like Jalen Duran from Memphis College, who's really good center. They have guys like James Wiseman, Marvin Bagley. So now you have reclamation. He has projects that he can work with. James Wiseman, former, top pick. Marvin Bagley from Duke.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a lot of young guys. It's very intriguing. It could easily flame out and not go anywhere. But if they're going to really get some momentum and become get these guys balling and being, at least a .500 team, as soon as this year, I think Monty Williams is the guy to do it.
Yeah. I mean, we saw what he did in Phoenix. We saw the type of team that he inherited in Phoenix when he first came in. And he turned them from being a absolute dumpster fire with all the talent that they had into perennial contenders. And ultimately, he became the scapegoat of the team because they weren't able to get past, after their NBA Finals appearance, these last two seasons, they haven't been able to get past the conference semifinals.
Right, because Ayton was wearing high heels in the paint, not his fault. I mean, get that guy out of town. Yeah, no, Monty Williams got totally scapegoated. Not Monty Williams' fault at all. I think he might be happier to be in Detroit now, and he's getting paid a lot better too. Less pressure out there too. Less pressure out there too. He doesn't have to worry about Durant or CP is a little questionable. Booker seems like a great guy, but you know what I mean, like. Durant, he's probably walking around eggshells. Like Durant, like controls that team. Monty Williams is like a servant around his own players. It's got to be really annoying sometimes to coach these guys like James Harden or Durant. I think. I mean, now he gets a fresh start and a lot more money too. I mean, not a bad gig for Monty Williams. Now he can kind of start over.
No, and he's been the coach of a team like this before. I think we all remember the New Orleans Hornets before they became the Pelicans. How bad the Hornets were back in New Orleans, and he's been at this type of level before. So I think the thing is he couldn't pass up the money. They offered him that big of a deal to where, they're willing to pay whatever it took to get him on board. Because, they could have gone after Doc Rivers.
You got to overpay, man. If the owners want to do it, it's not the fans' money. Who cares? I mean, think about all this money that's thrown around at the pro level. Hey, let him overpay. He might be the guy to really, turn him around. So good luck to him.
I mean, they could have gone after Doc Rivers. They could have gone after Nick Nurse. There's a few people they could have gone after. But instead, they decided to put all this money into Monty Williams. So they
I think Monty's more accustomed to like you were saying with him rebuilding another team previously. I think he's more accustomed and more comfortable and more confident building a younger team. Nick Nurse was kind of on the fast track of, kind of that high level, which I think Monty is, but Nick was probably like, I'd like to go to Philly or Milwaukee. Monty Williams, I think, was more attitude-wise, emotionally, was probably more open to the idea of going into a real rebuilding plan. So I think it's a great fit in Detroit for Monty.
What are your thoughts, Lou, with Monty Williams signing with Detroit?
Good luck with that dumpster fire. I mean, they haven't done anything, in a long time. It's been a long time since Detroit's been anything, anything of any decency. So,
they have like five of the best young draft picks in a row. Really good young lineup, but we'll see.
Yeah, but good draft picks don't get you a championship. mostly. You know, we've seen teams with draft picks, but they haven't really done much.
Yeah.
I mean, it is something to think. It is something to think about, though.
It's not a total like lost cause. It's going to take a lot of work, but I think he's the right guy to maybe get their potential going. So I think it's great for Detroit.
Well, don't see it right away.
They're overpaying him to because he's going to deal with a lot of pressure and a lot of stress.
To keep an eye on moving forward. You know, in terms of whether or not Monty can do if he can. Another thing to keep in mind is, you know, will they be able to stay healthy?
Yeah,
that's true.
I didn't mean to say pressure or stress. Really, I think he's dealing with a big assignment. But you know, he's not trying to coach the Celtics right now. That's more pressure to me. Detroit's almost like a step back. He can kind of reset and like rebuild. That's what I meant to say.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to walk on eggshells, basically.
He doesn't have to win it all.
Is what you're
saying. Drop
right.
A perfect play for Kevin Durant, who, you know, if you piss him off, he's going to demand a trade next minute. That's pressure, coaching a guy like that, where you're not really a coach. You're like Kevin's little brother. I mean, I'd rather coach a team like Detroit. So that, maybe that's why Monty did that, and they definitely helped his bank account, too. So I want to see how they do. And they have a lot of young picks, so we'll see. Maybe they go like 8th seed, and they're all like 21 years old, so they're going to keep getting a little bit better each year, hopefully. And I think the long-term deal makes sense, too, because they're on a trajectory, right? They're not looking to win it all next year, so I think overall it makes sense.
Right.
He's really good with younger players, so that's probably the best possible coach they could have gotten. It's great for Detroit. Hopefully it's good for Monty, too.
Now, let's go over to, because we brought up Nick Nurse earlier. Let's talk about Nick Nurse to Philly. Now, you want to talk about a guy who can get the best out of his players. We saw what Nick Nurse was able to do with Toronto. And I said that, you know, I said this honestly from the beginning of, once the offseason officially started, once the playoffs officially started. If there's one guy out there on the coaching market that you want to bring in that you think can take the next step for your team, that's Nick Nurse. I mean, apart from he's probably considered to be one of the best defensive-minded coaches in the league today. Now, I mean, things fell apart, obviously, later on, you know, at the end of his Toronto deal. But, I mean, there's no denying what he brought to that Raptors team. You know, many would argue that if it wasn't for bringing in Nick Nurse, I mean, obviously they had Kawhi that year, but many would argue that you may not have been looking at a Toronto Raptors NBA title run that year.
No.
And I still believe too that he was unjustly fired from Toronto. I think he shouldn't. You know, there's no reason why he should have been let go in the first place. For some reason, they decided to let go of him.
Franchise roster configuration there. Van Fleet's also leaving. Siakam might leave even last year of his deal. Then you have the reigning rookie of the year, Scotty Barnes, who definitely had a sophomore slump.
Yeah,
they had injuries. Gary Trent Jr. Then, like Steve, like you pointed out previously, I mean, yeah, they got Poeltl. Great, you know, when they were already in the gutter, you know, they got him for like 15 games. So yeah, that was a really weird, not an optimal, not a really good year in Toronto, health wise, roster wise, and you know how it goes. So someone's got to go. It was the head coach. Nick Nurse is a great coach.
Right.
So I don't think Nick Nurse wants Harden, personally. Kind of going to what Philly's going to be about. No, Nick Nurse doesn't even want that around him. He's going to build around Embiid. Draft-wise, they have kind of a regular late round draft pick.
Yeah.
They're going to free up money without Harden, and people like Philly, and now they've this side of Jokic, they have maybe the second best player in the world, and they have a great coach, so they're probably going to attract. They're going to rebuild with Nurse, but they're rebuild on the fly.
And I'll say this: I believe that they're in a better spot right now,
of course, than they were a week ago.
Than with Doc. I mean, obviously,
of course, 100%.
I'm not saying Doc sucks right now. I'm not saying that at all. Doc is still a very great head coach. It's just clear that the team wasn't really responding well with Doc. And that, this is one of those cases where it's clear that a coaching change is needed.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
that's
what
we ended up seeing here.
Yeah, not only in Toronto and in Philadelphia. I mean, kind of wash your hands, kind of start a new day tomorrow. They both had to move on because if you're not winning it the way you are, you got to change. That's it.
Right. Now, as it pertains to Philly, though,
I don't want Harden back.
If I'm a Philly fan, I don't want
Harden back.
Right. Yeah, I don't think Harden's coming back. I think he's been dead set on returning to Houston. Because he played in Team USA. Let's not forget he played for Team USA, who Ime Udoka was an assistant coach for.
Oh, there you go. I think you're trying to tell me, how great he was. Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, that's great. You know, 2K.
No.
And when he's not, hungover or high, yeah, he's played pretty player. He's got so much potential, which is so frustrating. I imagine coaching that guy. He can just get you fired the next day when he's lazy and doesn't want to play like he cares, and his team loses. Embiid, I'll tell you one person who's not going to send him any postcards is Embiid. They were never tight. Embiid's like, I went from Ben Simmons to this guy. Get them all out of here. Give me guys who want to play hard every night. That's what Embiid deserves, and that's what he wants.
Yeah.
I mean, Harden, give me a break. Go to Houston, win 30 games a year, and go to the strip clubs every night. James, you're happy. Hit the road.
I think he's at the point of his career where he's probably figuring at this point, I've had so many opportunities to win a ring. I've been on so many teams that have been constructed.
Harden.
That have been constructed to potentially win a ring. If I couldn't win a ring with those teams, how the hell am I going to win a ring now? So I guarantee
you're talking about Harden,
probably just
you're talking about Harden, right? You're talking about Harden.
Harden, yeah. Harden.
Well, I mean, Steve, let's be honest, though. He's not given his full effort. He's definitely come up short. He's not played defensively. He has lagged around. He's sulked. He's gotten people fired. Hello, Brooklyn. I mean, come on. How many chances do you want to give this guy? He's like a fat version of Kyrie Irving. I wouldn't want anyone, either one of them, near my building.
Like,
who am I to say that? But you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not championship players. Sorry. Well, yeah, Kyrie got one with LeBron. Good luck. And now he's going to go back to L.A., hopefully. Well, maybe. But, I mean, Harden just – I would trust right now if I had to bet. And Embiid does not want Harden back. Even if he wanted to come back, I don't think Embiid wants him back. I think Nick Nurse in the front office is going to build a couple guys. I mean, Maxey's got to step up. You made a great couple points a couple weeks ago on your show. Guys like Maxey, Melton, I don't know if they're going to be like the next guy, Stockton, Malone. You need that great point guard with the big man. I don't know if they're it, but someone else has got to be the number two for Embiid. Embiid deserves better than what Harden gave Embiid.
I do think
the Sixers deserve better.
I do think Nick Nurse could unlock Maxey.
Yeah.
I do think he could unlock him.
There you go. And Harden, I don't think Pat Riley can unlock Harden. I don't think there's anything in a treasure trove. I mean, he's got nothing emotionally. He's not a true champion. Maxey's a hungry young guy. Mm-hmm. Good call. Nick Nurse could tap. Nick Nurse would much rather coach Maxey than he would Harden. Yeah. Good call.
Right. Let's see. One of the other coaching changes as well. This one was a bit of a surprise for me. The Bucks have come to an agreement with Raptors assistant coach Adrian Griffin.
Yeah.
Wow. Now this will be his second time with the Bucks franchise, as he began his coaching career as an assistant with the team between the 2008 and 2010 seasons. But since then he has jumped around to Chicago, Orlando, Oklahoma City, and Toronto. Spending the previous five seasons with Toronto. But before his coaching career, he had played nine seasons in the NBA for five different teams. But, you know, this is just kind of mind-boggling to me, because I can't believe they went with Adrian Griffin over other experienced coaches on the market.
My only explanation would be, Steve, that there's something behind the scenes, a.k.a. one of the key players. Maybe they have a really good rapport, relationship. You know what I mean? They didn't, pick his name out of a hat. They didn't go to Indeed.com and go, oh, this guy's resume is good. There's obviously something going on behind the scenes where they really had a great feeling and a great positive energy about this guy. So maybe he's the next, you know, best thing since sliced bread. There's got to be something to it. You know what I mean? They're a smart franchise. That's what I'm saying. They don't just randomly pick random guys.
Yeah, my understanding is the front runner was Nick Nurse, but then Nick Nurse pulled out of the talks. He pulled out of the running, which then made them go over to Griffin.
I thought Vogel would be good there too, but I'm glad Vogel got a job. I've always really liked him. You had a good insight on him too on Lucio earlier too.
Vogel going over to Phoenix, and he's another, just like Monty Williams, he's another fall guy, basically.
He's good at taking the knife in the back. I'm telling you, if you want to be a good coach, don't stick around the divas. Look at Denver. I don't see any divas. They're about to get a ring.
Yep.
That's the new age. Hopefully, you're not gonna, you know. This isn't 2K. You can't go, you know what? Let's go meet in South Beach next month. Sorry, LeBron. There's no Bosh and Wade. You know, we've got to get back to the real teams right now. Though. Denver didn't pull any BS moves, and I think Denver's far and away the favorite now. You know what I'm saying? Meet me in South Beach next year. Make the decision. Like, the LeBron and AD move was weird enough. And then they added all the free agents. Thank God they got knocked out. But, you know, got to keep the game as pure as you can, or else who's to say hockey doesn't turn out that way, or baseball, like where everyone just joins the same team? I think that was a really bad look for the NBA overall, and I think it's getting back. I mean, Denver's kind of a fresh breath of air.
Well, to be fair, in hockey, there's a much tighter salary cap, so there's no way that can happen in hockey. There's no way that can happen in hockey unless players did what LeBron, Bosh and Wade did, where they met beforehand and maybe they decide, okay, we're going to take pay cuts. You know, say, I'll give an example. Say Patrice Bergeron comes back to Boston for one more year and he brings in, hang on, let me look at the free agent list for this year. Let's say he brings, or he's real good friends with, say, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, just for example. And the problem is Boston can't afford to have all three of them. So what a team in the NHL would have to do is they would have to, players would have to agree to lesser deals with maybe perhaps bonus incentives. The bonus incentives, if they would cause them to go over the salary cap, the bonus incentives would just count for next season, which is what it's doing to Boston this year, which is why Boston can't afford to sign a lot of free agents this year.
Yeah.
That's how you can do it in hockey, but in basketball, it's a lot simpler because in basketball, you know, they have different levels that you can sign at. You know, there's the midterm, the mid-level exception. There's the taxpayer exception. You know, there's different levels of a contract that NBA players can sign. So it's much easier for NBA super teams to be formed as opposed to NHL super teams.
Yeah, and it's almost a black eye on pro sports. So I'm glad it's harder, and I'm really hopeful that the NBA toughens up and doesn't make this a total mockery where people can draft their own 2K teams every summer. I mean, let's build teams organically through the draft, through trades. Hockey is, I think, a lot healthier right now than NBA. As far as, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
From old school fans. I'm sorry, I'm not on TikTok, you know. You know, I'm 45 going on 20, but at least I don't, you know, I'm not TikTok. I know a damn lot about sports, and I know that I don't want to see, you know, five guys get on a random team. I'd rather watch a smaller underdog team. Granted, I'm a Portland fan, but you get what I'm saying. I like the underdog.
Yeah.
I like organic, you know, keep Dame Lillard in Portland. Yeah, that means a lot to me. I don't want to see, you know, I never want to see a Connor McDavid leave Edmonton to sign with the Rangers when he's 37. I don't like that stuff. You know, keep it homegrown, keep it real.
I'll tell you this right now, though. It might be a good off season to be a Portland Trailblazers fan.
Well, number three pick, yeah. Number three pick.
I'm not talking about that.
One ball off. What's up?
I'm not talking about that.
I'm psyched as a Blazer fan right now to get the number three pick.
There's a certain big name.
Jaylen Brown.
If he is dealt, I don't know if it would be for the number three pick, but if he's dealt, Portland is one of the destinations.
Okay, so there's the guy without the, obviously, hopefully no one else has the gun-waving stuff, but yeah. Almost a John Morant. They're calling him like a Russell Westbrook Morant. Scoot Henderson is the number three projected player. Portland has number three. Obviously, number one, Spurs, Big Papa Popovich, taking Victor, the 7-5 guy. Jesus. The Blazers were so close to getting him. Anyway, let's not cry. We're still, you know, yesterday's gone. Whatever. So now, yeah, Brandon Miller, I guess, projected Alabama 6'9", small forward. The only reason he's going to Charlotte, number two, Charlotte already has Lonzo Ball. They already have a point guard. So the best point guard in the draft by far is this guy, Scoot. Yeah, and I think Boston Celtics, they can use a new guy to combo with Tatum. Yeah, the Blazers are offering number three and Anthony Simmons. Oh, Vegas goal.
White Cloud.
Whoa. I mean, Steve, would you give up Jaylen Brown for the number three pick? This rookie point guard is supposedly sensational. It's like 6'3", built like a brick house. He's like a Marcus Smart.
Here's
like
the thing that I'm wondering. Here's
Marcus
the thing
Smart
that I'm wondering. The thing that I'm wondering here, though,
he's much better than Marcus Smart.
Is this the ceiling of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum? Like, have we reached?
I don't think it is.
The ceiling. And number two, the only way I see Jaylen Brown being moved is this. Obviously, Brad Stevens came out during his end of the season press conference, and he stated that the team wants Jaylen Brown to remain a Celtic for the long haul.
He is eligible
for the Supermax. Here's the problem. Is that Brown and Tatum are both eligible for the Supermax.
Yes.
And signing the both of them obviously would be top priority. However, the problem is that it would severely handcuff them financially,
right,
when it comes to contracts. And another thing as well is, does Jaylen Brown even want to remain a Boston Celtic? Because he's always been very critical of how fans see him. You know, he's really it almost seems like he's basically, I don't want to call him soft, but it's like it's almost as if he can very easily have the fans get to his head, essentially. So I think if they move Jaylen Brown, it's probably because, I don't think it's because they feel that they've reached their ceiling. I think it's because Brown will probably have told them that he doesn't want to sign there for the long term.
Yeah.
Well,
and
I mean,
another thing too is
that his 8 turnovers in the last game didn't help his cause. And if your 2 best players both can be wings, that's kind of redundant. They could have a really good, maybe a John Morant Westbrook type point guard with Tatum to feed him the ball. That's what kind of people are suggesting. Jaylen Brown and Lillard would be awesome in Portland. Seems like a match. Portland would have to give up more than the 3, which is amazing because you're going to draft a 21. You're going to get a 21-year-old incredible point guard to hit. I mean, the smart thing. Is Brogdon a free agent?
No, Brogdon has. I think Brogdon has like 1 more year left on his deal. One or 2 more years
for them. And I'm pushing it a little bit, Steve. Realize that. Obviously, I'm a Portland fan, so I'm trying to push it. I'm trying to lobby for that. I'm not being totally unbiased. Jalen's contract coming up too. So, I mean, you literally get a new player for what, a 5-year rookie deal.
Yeah.
And this guy's apparently like the next Westbrook. You could get a 21-year-old like Westbrook for no money compared to Jaylen Brown. Just switch him. That's kind of a good move.
Well,
for Boston.
Put it this way, though. Another thing, too, is with Malcolm Brogdon, people are starting to wonder if they may move him, too, because of the fact that his value is at its highest right now.
With him having won Sixth Man of the Year,
a lot of people believe he could easily be a starter.
Why not trade Jaylen Brown? Trade Jaylen Brown, get Scoot. This guy's going to be the next John Morant. The Portland trade. Trade Jaylen, then you have Scoot, and then you have Brogdon at the 2. So you replace Jaylen, and then you have Tatum. You could start Brogdon. That's a little bit.
Well, the thing is, they would prefer to start White and then start Brogdon.
Oh, White was playing incredible, too. They just ran out of steam. Missoula let a lot of people down. I don't know if he did.
Coming off of this series, I don't even know if it was Missoula.
You're right.
Yeah.
I really don't. I really don't even know if it was Missoula. I think with all the reports that came out about the team privately hating each other, and you know that they were going to be glad that this was back when they were facing a 3-0 hole. They were going to be glad that they could stop faking it with each other. I don't even know if it's Missoula. I think it's more of the fact that these guys just couldn't get out of their minds that, oh, Ime Udoka is no longer coaching us. So, now we have to fucking piss and moan, just because our team just because our team mishandled a PR thing here, which is basically that's what it was. It should have been handled by human resources with Ime Udoka, as opposed to being made into a press conference and everything. I understand why the players may be pissed off at that, that they kind of felt like Ime was made an example out of, essentially. I understand that, but at the same time, you guys are playing for your jobs, right? So,
well, it's a matter of pride.
You know,
I hate seeing that.
It just
stuff, man.
Seems,
you know, these guys, like, they need motivation to play at this stage. Like, weren't they in high school trying to, like, win a championship? Or didn't they get cut from JV like Jordan did? Don't they have some, like, killer instinct like Kobe? They need, like, motivation to play hard.
Not.
You know what I mean? Making, like, $40 million a year.
Right.
You can't play hard.
Right.
Kids are desperate to play a game in middle school, and they're making $50 million a year, and they can't play hard. That's why I have such a problem with Harden, as you know. But whatever.
Yeah.
It is what it is. So, like, you know, I love Marcus Smart. I love Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown's problem was he just kept turning the ball over. He's not a great dribbler. And gets exposed. You know what I mean, Lou?
Oh,
so
yeah.
So it's like, I think, and then they're kind of like, one's on the left, one's on the right. Neither one's a big man, neither one's a point guard. I think you're not moving Tatum. Maybe you move Brown. Brown's contract's coming up, too. I think now is the time to trade Brown and get a really good young point guard. Portland can do that for you.
What are your thoughts, Luke, on the current status of the Boston Celtics following their elimination by the Miami Heat in the conference finals? What are your thoughts? Where do you believe Boston stands right now?
Right now, Boston. I'm not going to say rebuild. I mean, that's how the question. You know, they were the top in the conference all year, but you know they really got to work on you know a few things during the off season. I mean, there was no way they should have lost that game to begin with. They had it in the bag. They had momentum going into that game seven after that dramatic victory. So I think they do have to work on a few things. For next season, get better shooting, bring getting a better guard. So, that was just mind-boggling how they just managed to collapse in that final game, the ultimate choke signal.
Yeah. Right. It just seemed like their whole, you know, I mean, it's no secret. Their entire game plan this season was live and die by the three. And
yeah, never a recipe for long term. It is what it is, man. Yeah. Live by the three, die by the three. That's a dangerous dagger. You get stabbed in the back by yourself in the end, unless you're Steph and Klay Thompson.
Yeah, but it, you know, it's like, okay, you have live or die by the three, but yet what was working for them during this, you know, during this this huge comeback, this comeback from being down 3-0, was they were getting to the basket. You know, they were capitalizing on second chance points.
To echo you, yeah, they were attacking the rim. You can't sit out there on the perimeter. Come on, man. This is the YMCA. You got to attack the perimeter. Attack the rim. Then you get people in foul trouble. You slow down the game, make people think. You can't just sit around there. It's not a 3-point contest.
No,
yeah,
stupid.
They were being more aggressive. That's what was getting them back into the series.
That's what you needed. You got to be more aggressive.
Yeah. When in doubt, attack the rim. Go to the bucket. Go to the hole.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear. You know, I ragged on Joe Mazzulla during the series, and even you know the Philadelphia series, I ragged on him. I don't think Joe Mazzulla was the reason why they lost.
No,
he got a lot better at the end. It's not even like he saved face.
Yeah.
He didn't have some, like, calamity or travesty, but he was getting thoroughly out. He was getting worked like he was getting, you know, cooked like a rib early on, and then he really made adjustments. And he did say, you know what, he raised his hand and said, you know what, no, I am a legit coach. Joe really coached well, I think, at the end. And Brad Stevens recognized that, and that's the most important person in Mazzulla's life right now because he's coming back for next year.
Yeah, he just got
– Brad Stevens recognized
the problem is he got thoroughly it's just
– He put him in a hole. He put him in a hole.
You know,
you can't go down three zip. I mean, Christ.
Right. I mean, it doesn't help that
–
It doesn't help that he put them in a hole, but it just I really hate referring to my team. Yeah.
He wasn't experienced.
Dude. I mean,
he learned by fire, trial by fire.
I just really hate referring to my team like this, but it's almost like this team is basically like a whole bunch of crybabies. Like they're still pouting. They're still pouting all because Ime Udoka got fired.
They got mad at my coach for sleeping on his wife, sleeping around. Life moves on. And again, I always keep bringing this up, but yeah, you're making $30 million a year. Play basketball, have fun. You know, you're on TV. You're not collecting garbage. You're not cleaning windows and, you know, somebody 30 stories up every day for $20 an hour. Like, this is not a really terrible job. Keep moving. Keep being positive. Yeah, you're right. They were crying over spilled milk. Oh, Ime Udoka left. Well, yeah, move on. I was hoping that Brad Stevens would go back if it was that bad. I mean, what are these guys? They're acting like they're working at Walmart getting, like, hammered by people. Dude,
it was just so pathetic.
There's no excuse.
It was so pathetic, honestly, watching a team like this that
Mazzulla was on the staff last year. It's not like they brought in some random dude holding the clipboard.
Right.
Where's Coach Udoka? Dude, they know Mazzulla. That's an excuse by the players. That's inexcusable.
Yeah.
Right. And another thing too is I mean, yeah, they were, you know, they got down 3-0, but I mean, you're basically being mocked by all of the NBA media. You're being mocked by the fans. You're basically being made into a complete laughingstock, and it was basically like these guys were all under the same agreement of like, let's just go home early. Let's get to the off season as quickly as possible. Essentially.
Where's your motivation?
It's like, why not, you know, why don't you play with pride? I mean, at least show some pride for your own damn self.
Exactly, Steve. Like Steve or Lou, like, you know, high school or, you know, maybe a job that we've all had, or like, you know, if someone you really like leaves and then like someone else you appreciate takes over, keep going. They didn't bring in some random like robot, some terrible person. Mazzulla was part of the greatness that made them the great Celtics again last year, before this year. They didn't bring in some random person. So why make excuses over Udoka? Udoka put his where he shouldn't have. And now he's in Houston, probably with Harden and in the strip clubs. But anyway, they're making excuses.
Yeah.
Oh, Vegas again.
If I was in that Celtics locker room during that, during that whole ordeal when they went down 0-3, I would have. I'm pretty sure Al Horford probably did something similar. I would have said, what the fuck are we doing? These guys are a number 8 seed. We were a number 2 seed heading into these playoffs. We are not playing Celtics basketball. What the fuck are we doing right now?
Yeah.
You know, I would have felt humiliated, honestly. to even be in that type of hole against a team where you had one guy in Caleb Martin playing all of a sudden like he was Michael Jordan and landing every single fucking shot that he took.
He was cut by the Hornets and the lottery Hornets. And his brother, his twin brother, still plays for the Hornets. And this guy's lining up like he's Dominique Wilkins.
Yeah, and by the way, might I add, I believe he was scoreless in game one against Denver.
I really like the guy, too. I'm not trying to sound like I'm trying to, like, slam, like, you know, throw the guy in the mud, but his story is amazing. This guy was, like, cut by the Hornets. But game one, he totally got put in his place. Defense, size, Denver.
Yeah. And I understand here we're sort of combining not just problems with the Celtics, but we're also combining that with the NBA Finals now, because it's a very good transition.
You guys need to get more D-level. Time Lord's awesome. Tell me when you know the answer. I wish I had an answer. Father Time is undefeated. But, you know, Time Lord, Al Horford's not getting any younger, right? So they probably need to get.
You know, I almost think I wouldn't be surprised if Al Horford gets moved. I mean, he's going to be making $11 million. He's going to be making, around $11 million. He may get moved.
You got to get younger now. I mean, I hate to say it, but this league is a fast, athletic league, man. It's the NBA. This is the best of the best. I mean, Al Horford's a really proud Celtic, and overall, I mean, he might is he Hall of
Fame?
No. Plus, he's time All-Star, whatever. You get my drift. Overall, yeah, he's not going to be any younger next year. In a perfect world, again, the salary cap is a painful part of our life, right? You would love to have him as, like, a first guy off the bench. You'd love to have a guy, Embiid or the Knicks or anyone next year, but if they can't afford it.
Yeah.
Steve, do you really, as a Celtics fan, would you move Jaylen Brown? Because next year he's a free agent. This is the year.
The only way I would move Jaylen Brown is if he 100% is not coming back. The way I mean it is if he has told management that he is not interested in signing long term, then yeah, I would move him. At the same time, I kind of felt like the Celtics. I kind of felt like both him and Tatum proved this season that they could coexist alongside each other out there in the starting lineup. You know, that they could prove that they would be a force, basically, when they're out there on the court together. That I think the big thing that Brown has to look at is he's not gonna be the guy of this team. That's Tatum.
No.
So
no.
if he's fine with being a number two to Tatum, then
Tatum, Brown,
you know,
the Celtics have to move on. Harry, come on.
It does kind of make me wonder if, and another thing too is if we do get rid of Brown, it would take something like, for example, going to Portland. It would take something like the number three pick.
That's the thing.
Huh?
Scoot Henderson, is it like a John Moran or a Westbrook? That's pretty tantalizing. That's pretty sexy. That's pretty tempting, right?
Yeah.
And then you have
something,
a contract for 5 years. Then you don't have Brown's contract. You can sign another one or two other guys down low with Horford or with Brogdon. And,
I
love Smart. I don't think he's a starter. Smart's confusing. He's not because he doesn't facilitate. This young guy could be like an awesome point guard to give Tatum the ball.
Make no mistake about it. He can facilitate. There was one game there was one game against Miami. I think it was game one where he had like 10 assists at the half.
Yeah, right.
No joke. He had literally no joke. He had 10 assists at the half.
I love Brown. I think that money and that contract is better served somewhere else. It's kind of that year, and after what just happened, and Portland really loves Jaylen Brown, this might be a great deal to quickly jump on.
You
could have a superstar point guard with Tatum now. Instead of, like, you know, Brown's awesome, but it's like they're both kind of similar. They both play outside. I don't know. It's a tough call.
Yeah, and you know, another place that has been brought up is the Atlanta Hawks, which is where Jaylen Brown obviously, you know, he's from Atlanta. So
Trey Young would be awesome.
One of the potential scenarios that has been discussed is Brown to Atlanta for John Collins, Sadiq Bey, and multiple draft picks.
No way. No way. If I'm picking up the phone in Atlanta, I'm calling for Trey Young. Trey Young's not happy there, and they're not happy with Trey Young. No.
Well, the problem with Trey
Steve,
Young
no way.
Is
John
that...
Collins? John Collins not close to Jaylen Brown. No way.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. The problem with Trey Young is that he's too much of a defensive liability.
Well, a lot of people are now in the NBA. Yeah, I mean, you could have Trey Young, you could have Marcus Smart, the two, and then you could have, yeah, that would be tough.
I would love Trey Young. The problem is
he'd be
too
awesome
much of a
Boston.
Defensive liability for a team
awesome
for a team
Boston.
That prides themselves on defense.
Yeah. Well, they need more Marcus Smart, Al Horford players. That's the thing. They have the identity. Well, show me the proof. Right now, their roster, Time Lord, I love, you love. Marcus Smart, awesome defender. That's the identity. That's the DNA. So if you want to get one of those other guys, though, they might not have the same DNA, though. They might not have the same identity
right.
defensively. So it's a give and take.
Right.
Like, it's tough. I mean, the guy Scoot, the number three, the pick that Portland has, if you move Jaylen, Jaylen's a very good defender. Apparently, this guy Scoot's like a Marcus Smart type defender. Not as good
right.
as Marcus Smart, but defensively, but much better offensively. So it's tough. Because now you have, I thought Brogdon should have been starting the whole season. He's an awesome point guard, I think. 6'6", lefty. I mean,
now,
that guy's awesome.
Now, what's being talked about, it all depends on what Damian Lillard wants. There are two different things that have been talked about, that if Damian Lillard wants out of Portland, you may be looking at a swap that involves both Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart as part of a Damian Lillard deal. However, there's also, if Lillard wants to stay, one of the potential trades is Anfernee Simons, Nasir Little, and multiple first-round picks, including the number three pick.
Yeah, Anfernee Simons is a good, really good player. He's 6'3". So he's smaller. He doesn't
And Boston has been looking at him for quite some time, too.
He plays no defense. I watch Portland way too much. God forbid. I mean, God bless me. I don't know why I'm a Blazers fan, but anyways. Yeah, he's like a C.J. McCollum. Like, he's a volume scorer. He's much better. He's instant offense. He can score 40 points in a night, but he doesn't play a lot of defense at all. And he's not a true point guard. So he's a bad pairing with Lillard. They're looking to move him. Portland has their shooting guard of the future, Shaedon Sharpe, who they drafted last year.
Right.
So they want to move off of Simons and get more defense. Anfernee Simons, really, really good player. He came out straight from high school. Went to IMG, Orlando guy. Simon's immensely talented. He can score 40 a night, any given night, but he just doesn't play a lot of defense. That's the thing. He's like a microwave Johnson. He's a volume scorer. So I don't know if he's like a great starter. I think he's better served as a point guard. If they offer the number three and Simons for Jaylen Brown, I think Boston would do that automatically.
Probably, yeah. Let's get JB's thoughts. JB is joining us for the extra hour here. JB, have you been paying attention at all to the NBA playoffs? In particular, now the NBA Finals are upon us.
No, I have not. I'm more or less called just to listen.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. I should have taken that advice years ago.
Okay. Well, did you get to watch? You didn't get to watch any basketball at all, JB, as of recent?
No. Me and basketball, no.
Damn.
Well, Lou, what are your thoughts, Lou, on the whole Celtics problem that they face themselves with?
Well, as I stated earlier, you know, with the way how things just unravel in Game 7, you know, I thought they had it in the bag, and they just put on the choke signal right there. So, you know, they blew themselves.
But do you think that there may be wholesale moves that might have to happen this off season?
Well, maybe. You know, because I mean, they were sure supposed to, you know, win this game, and they choked right into home court. I think somebody in the front office is going to, you know, have something to say about it. I mean, look, they fired Monty Williams. They fired, you know, Doc from Philadelphia. They're having a tremendous season. So, yeah, I think there's going to be something happening. You know, the front office is going to have a discussion with, you know, maybe the coaching staff or whatnot. So it can get pretty ugly in these next couple of weeks. Oh, boy. Stay tuned. And we have an Epi Net Gold. That is a Golden Knights winner.
Yep, that'll do it for Vegas. So Vegas will take game one. They will take game one of this potential 7-game series. Well, right now 4-2 with about 2 minutes left, and Vegas is on the power play. So that's pretty much gonna put a bow on this game, at least, barring a miraculous comeback here.
Steve, I love you to death. I was so close. I was like Clint Eastwood. I had an itchy trigger finger. I was gonna take Vegas. I said, hey, before the show, should I take Vegas? He said, nope, Florida, Broski. I said, okay. I held off. That was a crap game.
Well,
I'm
telling you, Vegas.
Can't pick that game.
Vegas, they're just.
I'm not blaming you.
Wow, I'm just very surprised right now. They're a lot better depth wise than I thought.
It could be again grueling series, third line, fourth line.
I mean, you got to go from Zach Whitecloud to take the lead. Mark Stone added a insurance tally, and Mark Stone, that's a guy who's been one of the top players in the league for how many years and has never been to the Stanley Cup. And now he has the opportunity. Or wait, no. He went to the Stanley Cup, I think, when did he join Vegas? Might have been his first year in Vegas, I think. Yeah, his first year in Vegas. No, he got injured that year. I said, or wait, no. Wait a minute. When did Vegas make it? Was it 2018, 2019?
Yes. 18.
Okay, he was traded to Vegas that year. Yeah, he was traded to Vegas that year from Ottawa. So he was in the Stanley Cup Finals that year. Problem is, he only played about 7 games in that playoffs. I think he ended up having a
4-3-2-1. Yes.
I think he ended up getting injured in the playoffs, and that's why. I think that may partially be why Vegas didn't win the cup that year, was because they didn't have Mark Stone as part of their... Wait a minute. Let me check. You know, I'm very interested right now. Let me check the 2018 Cup Finals. No, Mark Stone did not play at all. So Stone got injured that year.
Oh.
So this technically, this is his first Stanley Cup Final appearance.
Okay.
It would have been his second, but Vegas, you know, he wasn't active in the Cup Finals that year for Vegas. So,
mm-hmm.
But maybe. By the way, teams that win Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final, 76% of the time they have won the series. So. A good sign for the Vegas Golden Knights, taking one step closer, and maybe Butch Cassidy will finally get his Stanley Cup that he's been looking for as a head coach. Without the Sundance Kid, yeah.
Oh, we got it.
Bruce Cassidy. You know, he was formerly the coach of the Bruins, but he was also the former coach of the Washington Capitals as well. Where,
right.
If anybody remembers that, everybody remembers how he left Washington, where everybody was saying, "There's no way this guy can cut it as an NHL coach," despite making the playoffs in his first year out of 2 years with Washington. And then he got fired in his second year with an 18-1 record. Then he goes to Boston, makes playoff appearances in each of his 6 seasons at the helm, ended up losing in the Stanley Cup Finals in Game 7 back in 2019. And now here he is back again in the Stanley Cup Finals. And... off
full
to
circle.
A good start so far.
Wow. 5-2.
Yep.
Well, I mean, the thing is, Steve, you know, Florida's not – one thing, they're not scared. So, you know, 1-0, big deal. They're not blinking. They're lacing them up. They're ready to play tomorrow. So, you know, they'll wait a few days. But, again, I'll hold to it. Yeah, this series is going 7 games.
Yeah. I would be surprised if it doesn't go 7. I think between both matchups, whether if it was Florida-Dallas, I don't think that goes 7. If it was Vegas and Carolina, I don't think that goes 7. But Florida and Vegas, I would be very surprised if this doesn't go 7. And I'm talking very surprised because simply because of how evenly matched when you compare these two teams, how evenly matched they look on paper. But obviously, you know, as we know, on paper is one thing, and the product out there on the ice is a completely different thing.
Okay.
Real quick, Celtics general manager Brad Stevens did say that Joe Mazzulla would officially return next season as the Celtics head coach, and the season's moving forward, might I add. So despite the collapse and everything in Game 7, he is considered to be their permanent head coach moving forward. The New York Knicks, they have parted ways with general manager Scott Perry, with his contract set to expire this summer. The last time that his contract was set to expire, they gave him a two-year extension after they made the playoffs back in 2021. This time, though, even though they brought in, even though he brought in Jalen Brunson last summer, apparently it was not enough, along with a playoff with a playoff appearance. It wasn't enough to keep Perry's for Perry to keep his
right.
his job, apparently. So I mean, let's just talk. You know, looking at it from this perspective, you guys obviously know the Knicks better than I do. Let's start with you, Lou. What do you think of this decision for them to all of a sudden move on from their general manager like this?
Well, I mean, really, you know, we have. I think it's a good move there. I wish they had fired Dolan, but that's not going to happen. But you know, I think if maybe they'll get more of a chance to you know, move on in the for the postseason, because we need that. We need more moves, you know, that helps to go further. We did well this season. Now maybe we can move a step forward. So I think it was the right move. To dump their general manager. Sometimes what you need too. But that's one of the big problems with it, is the team's general managers.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I mean sometimes maybe a change could be what you need.
Yes.
But I don't know. What are your thoughts, Alex, on the Knicks? All of a sudden, you know, despite getting Jalen Brunson and despite making another playoff appearance and actually making it to the second round of the playoffs this year, and now all of a sudden they're moving on from their general manager.
Well, yeah, that's a little bit strange to me. I mean, I love the fact that you guys know that. You know, very, very much so from where I've always been talking about the last couple of months. I'm really glad that Thibodeau is finally being rewarded and being recognized as a legit coach there. Are the kids' job is safe? Maybe there was some fighting in-house about what Thibodeau wants to do and what, you know, what the GM wants to do. I still think R.J. Barrett was a terrible draft pick. He's a pretty good player. You remember that? He was John Morant. John Morant was 2, and RJ was 3. That's a bad draft for the Knicks. Lefty cannot hit a shot. I would keep Randall. I would move RJ. I would probably move Mitchell Robinson, too. But, yeah, they have right now they have to re-sign his teammate from Villanova. He was injured, you know, at the end in their player run. But they need to bring him back. That's the first priority. And then I would probably,
yeah.
I mean, Randall, like, acted good again. He's like the crazy, the wife or whatever you want to call it, the crazy boss, you know. He acts good, then he acts bad the next day. I mean, total headache. I would keep Randall, I guess. I don't know. You know what? I would actually move Randall, if I could, for another pick.
Mm.
And I'd build around Brunson and Josh Hart.
Yeah.
That'd be my take on the Knicks. I think they need a new GM to actually clean house. As far as, you know, I wouldn't call it
right.
Because the Knicks have a good foundation.
Sure.
They have building blocks. They don't need to, like, reset. But get some of the, you know, the BS off the gutter, off the sidewalk.
So you ultimately think it was a good move for them to get rid of their general manager and start anew?
Yeah. Because I mean, if they did that again, there's something behind the scenes, you know, we're not privy to. We're not
right.
knowledgeable about. There's something else going on. So, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. Yeah. And,
right.
You know, maybe they move up.
Yeah.
Portland has the Blazers have their number one pick from the Josh Hart deal. So they're not going to make an impact draft, but I think maybe they can make a trade. I would move Randall for someone else. I mean, he's too, you know, I hate to use the word randomly, but, you know, kind of bipolar, left and right, north and south. You need someone a little bit more consistent because Brunson has proved that he's like a top-notch player in the world.
Right.
The Knicks, you know, love him or hate him, the GM who they just let go, he added Jalen Brunson. Amazing. He's one of the best players in the world.
Exactly.
So they have that. They have that.
I need to break this up, but I may be expecting a little brother to do his stuff at 11:30, so I have to leave it at that. But I'll be back next week. Remember, this is final exam time.
Okay.
All righty. No problem, Lou.
All right. I'll be back next week. Same time, same station.
Nice hearing
you, Lou. All right. Have a good night, Lou.
The Knicks are, you know, let's be honest, you know, they're not, no one ever thought they were going to win it all. Come on. But, you know, it's a proud city, you know, New York City, the Mecca, whatever the fuck it is. You know, the Knicks do have a proud, you know, tradition. They have really good fans. So it was good to see them actually get good again. I think it was really good for the league. And, you know, they were never a threat to win it all. But, you know, obviously there's some in-house fighting. So, you know, you move on.
Yeah, I guess I'm just kind of surprised that you move on from a guy who has basically brought your team back to relevancy.
Respectability.
And,
Respect.
You know, he's brought your team back to relevancy. And it's like all of a sudden they're like, you know, thanks for helping us, but yeah, you're not good enough to keep around. So, see ya.
And it's interesting because Steve, I mean, you, me, and you know, I think 94% of people would agree that sounds really messed up. That doesn't sound like it shouldn't be that way, right? It should be different.
Right.
I think there's something else. Maybe there's something else going on in house. You know what I mean? That's got to be the only explanation. Because he did, I mean, love or hate, I mean, I have no two cents in the matter, but, you know, I don't have a dog in the fight. I always root for the Knicks a little bit because I used to go to the Garden as a kid, and it was a pretty cool place. But, I mean, overall, you know, if that guy moved on, he made some pretty good moves, so there has to be something else going on there. But, you know, I think the best thing for them would bring in someone else old school. You know, I'm not saying Bobby Knight, you know, nothing like that, but maybe someone from, like, Midwest down south. I mean, the Knicks get carried away in the glamour a little bit. Now, when the Knicks are really good, they had DeBuscher, Phil Jackson, Walt Clyde, Frazier. I mean, the Knicks were the best, you know, in the 60s, 70s. That was their best, their height. And then, you know, Ewing, Starks, Oakley, X-Men, Anthony Mason. Those are like the proudest Knicks moments. You know, as a city, I think New York City, those are the best Knicks teams. Right now, they're kind of looking for their identity. They feel like they got it now. Maybe he wasn't in line with that. So it's like I would bring in someone else, blue collar. You know, add a couple more defenders. I think they have to move off R.J. Barrett, but they have Brunson's an absolute star. So I mean, I think they're going the right direction. They got to make a couple more moves.
Right, yeah, I definitely think they need to do – they probably do need to make a couple more moves. But, I am pretty satisfied, I guess I should say, with how they fared this season. When you,
they,
when you think
awesome.
Of –
I thought it was great.
Yeah, when you think of where – when you think of where they usually are –
Where they were, you know, a year or two ago. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a great year. You know, there's only one person that can, you know, wear a ring. Yeah, that's what I always say with all of sports, man. I mean, Eagles had an incredible year. Oh, they didn't win. They suck. No, they don't suck. They had a great year. The Chiefs won. So it's like, you know, it's a very competitive world in the world of pro sports, just like college. So, I mean, I think the Knicks are on the right course. Maybe it's better that he left. Maybe someone else is going on. I mean, maybe there's something we're not really sure of. So, but, I mean, if
right.
they can get back like that, imagine if they can get back like that, Phil Jackson. That would be a pimp move. That would be great.
Now, how about this? We were talking about the Lakers earlier, and we were talking about Trae Young. The Lakers have had internal discussions, according to Jovan Buha of The Athletic. He covers the L.A. Lakers, I think, for The Athletic. The Lakers decision makers have had internal discussions about what a potential trade offer for Trae Young would look like.
They would start with Anthony Davis, because you're not leaving LeBron. You're not getting LeBron. Yeah, the Hawks would lap you.
And it's also notable that Trae Young was in attendance for the Lakers' Game 4 loss to the Nuggets. So, you know, not sure if there's anything to that, but I think it's kind of interesting that the Lakers, and imagine if they can somehow do it without having Anthony Davis as part of the deal.
Unless Adam Silver, you know, literally, you know, makes it happen, which he's been known to do. NBA is great at facilitating deals that are just ridiculous. To get ratings, you know, a.k.a. the Lakers always win.
Yeah.
There's no realistic way that Trae Young goes to the Lakers. I mean, come on. If that happens, I mean, whatever. I've said that a million times at the NBA. It's the loosest salary cap ever, and the refs are kind of rigged. It's a tough league to stay loyal to. I'm still loyal to it, trust me, but, yeah. It's definitely not the old school, you know, it's not the NFL or MLB abuse days. I mean, the NBA, if we see the Lakers get another dynasty, if they get Trae Young, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
There's no feasible way for that to happen. But
no, it would Atlanta would have to be happy with taking the least amount possible in return for Trae Young.
No, I mean, the only way that conversation starts is Anthony Davis, because they're not giving up LeBron. LeBron might, you know, leave tomorrow. LeBron might retire tonight. He's up in the air.
Right.
The best piece that the Lakers have by far is Anthony Davis. But D'Angelo Russell was getting abused like a turnstile. He looked like a parking cone. he's saying, I'm going to go to Utah or Chicago. Like, no one wants him. I mean, who else would Lakers have? Hachimura Murray is a free agent. No, Lakers have no other piece to trade. Anthony Davis is a trade chip.
Right.
Who else would Lakers have to trade?
I mean, honestly, nobody that could.
I love
that
Reeves.
Could amount.
I love Reeves. Reeves the free agent. I love Reeves.
Yeah, but they want to try. I mean, you know, maybe Reeves would be a solid option to add in. But the problem is, I think Reeves is a free agent too.
Is he restricted, Steve? I was just about to ask you that. Is he free agent or restricted? Because I would do Reeves in like three number ones. I'd give you Trae Young.
Let me take a look real quick. Spotrac Reeves. Oh, wait a minute. These are players that are, let's see, free agents. No, go back. Okay, those are active contracts, free agents. Lakers. Reeves is a restricted free agent. Early bird rights.
And again, I mean, come on. That's cute. Reeves doesn't move the needle at all. The Hawks are looking for a haul. Come on, Trae Young. That's the face of the franchise.
All right, these are basically of the free, you know, of the Lakers right now. These are their free agents. D'Angelo Russell is a free agent. Malik Beasley is a free agent. Lonnie Walker is a free agent. Hachimura is a free agent. Reeves is a free agent. Dennis Schroeder. I mean, basically, the only players that are currently under active contract. Yeah, the only players under active contract as of now are Davis, LeBron, Malik Beasley, Mo Bamba, Jared Vanderbilt, Max Christie, and Cole Swider.
Wow.
Those are literally the only players that are under active contract right now.
Yeah. I mean, Reeves is like a, you know, quote-unquote, whatever you want to call it, like sexy possible thing. Because, I mean, Anthony Davis, you know, he walks around on stilts. That guy could get injured, you know, get into the sauna tomorrow. Reeves is kind of marketable and kind of tradable. So the Lakers, I mean, no wonder LeBron's out. Every other minute he's going, I'm retiring. I'm not retiring. I'm sorry. I'm not going to root for the Lakers to win a ring. Okay? I saw that way too much in my childhood. They've had their share. Yeah, give it to someone else. No. So it's going to be tough for the Lakers to get back there. And, you know, to me, overall, man, I mean, everyone loves and hates. He's very polarizing. I know. But you know what? He's never gotten arrested. He's never gotten tased. He's never told whatever. I don't look at it like that, but LeBron, love him or hate him, he's been a great ambassador for the NBA overall on the court. But I think his time is up in L.A. I don't see how he can – they're not going to win a ring there, okay? That soap opera, you know, that bullshit, whatever, 90210, it's not happening. So he's saying he might retire a year. Watch him. He's going to probably go to the next highest bidder, which is weak. I always have respect for LeBron just because he's incredible. But
right,
he's coming off kind of weak there because, you know, he's kind of playing the tightrope there. He's going, well, I might retire. He's going to wait and see what the Lakers do because he's LeBron, LeGM.
Yeah,
He's trying to play God. He's trying to play God. He's controlling a franchise.
I mean, I would not be surprised if he did retire because – I mean, you look at what they did. They came back from barely even being in contention to all of a sudden, you know, making a couple of huge moves at the deadline, and then all of a sudden they're in the playoffs, and nobody even saw them making it to the conference finals. They did. I think what he's assessing right now is there a legitimate? I mean, yeah, we made the conference finals, but we lost in four games. Is there a legitimate chance for me to potentially win a ring? Win another ring with LA, or
you're absolutely right, Steve.
Or should I just, you know, I don't think it's him waiting to see what the Lakers do. I think he's more assessing, you know, I think he's more assessing his future. Like, should I even go through the hassle of, you know, potentially trying to win another ring? Or should I just retire? I mean, one of the logical things that he could do, and this was brought up as an option, is he could take off this year, and then when his son gets drafted, he could come in for one more season to try and play with his son, whatever team drafts his son.
Yeah.
And I mean, he wouldn't
LeBron,
even have
LeBron's
to.
LeBron's going to calculate like he's, you know, again, very polarized. And I wish he never did that because he was a lot cooler when he stopped with all this different stuff that he does. But LeBron's going to sit back and watch what happens to the league, and then he's going to make a decision. Yes.
Right.
It is what it is.
I mean, he may just decide, like, even if he were to come back and, play alongside his son, he may end up taking the veteran minimum at that point. You know, just because he'll be coming back, that doesn't necessarily mean that he'll want, like, you know, a max deal, you know, maximum amount of money for 1 year. He could potentially play, I could see him playing for the veteran minimum, especially if it means that he gets to play one final season alongside his son.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing right there, Steve. I mean, he's obviously not, walking around the block looking for money. He's all set financially. So, yeah, he has that potential and that right to do that. And I think that's what he's going to do. I don't even know who's going to draft him. But, you know, it gets weird. But, yeah, I mean, it is pretty cool. That's kind of a – what's the last – any professional sport? What's Ken Griffey Sr., Ken Griffey Jr.? That's the last one, right? Father, son.
Yeah.
Red. Cincinnati.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the only reason why retirement talk is being brought up is because he's been filmed this season by the person who filmed the last dance with Michael Jordan. I think that's why the retirement talk has been brought up, that, you know, why would there be a documentary filmmaker filming LeBron this season?
Yeah. Oh, really? Well.
Yeah. Unless it was because of that. Unless it was that he is actively considering retirement. Because otherwise, I mean, why
What is Bronny or whatever? I mean, come on. Brownie? Like, what is his nickname? Bronny? Bronny. Okay.
Bronny.
When he comes in the league, what is it? So G League next year? Or is he, he's in college, right? USC or UCLA?
USC.
Okay. So, yeah. Bron right now is going to sit out a year. I can predict that. He's going to semi-retire, a.k.a. coming back. When he knows where Bron is going, Bronny is going, he's going to sign with that team. But like you said, for a minimum deal. Because he could walk around right now and throw $500,000 out of a Lamborghini and not blink. He doesn't need money. I wish I could sound like it. I'm just telling like it is. He doesn't need money. He wants to play 1 year with his son. So he'll sit out for a year.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
Yeah, so this might be his way of being able to do that, because maybe he's been told by Lakers management.
He can go wherever Bronny goes.
Yeah, he may have been told maybe by Lakers management, hey, look, we may not be looking at potentially drafting
Polinka.
Your son.
Polinka looks just like Rob Lowe. Amazing. Doppelgangers.
Because, I mean, let's remember, his son technically could be drafted as early as next year's draft.
Yeah, and from everything I've seen and heard, he's not a legit NBA player, but we'll see. I mean, if any team's going to just draft the guy to get a chance to have a 40-year-old LeBron, good luck. It's marketing. That's not to win a championship. That's to get money.
Basically. you know, who knows? I mean, it is possible, maybe, perhaps. Maybe we don't know how Bronny's going to play at the college level.
True.
Maybe he could develop.
Yeah. Sorry, Steve. I mean, he's not looking like a, you know. He looks like he could be really good. We'll see. I just don't like the hoopla where, oh, it's his son. Well, we've seen that with Pippen, Jordan's son. You know, other players. It takes a lot more than just being your dad was great to be great.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe he could potentially develop into a legitimate, you know, a legitimate NBA prospect. Obviously, you know, and still being able to be around L.A. is going to help, considering that he'll have his father to help develop him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be great to watch. And then, you know, it's random, I know, but, you know, college, I went to Ohio. I lived in Ohio for 6 years. I love that area. A lot of my friends are, you know, obviously Buckeye fans, you know, Cavalier fans, Indian fans. People love LeBron. I fell in love with, you know, just the idea of LeBron was such a transcendent, incredible talent. You know, I was out there for a while, and I loved it. I love the Midwest, too. I was joking, saying, you know, my family somehow met from the Midwest in New York City, had me in Connecticut, and dropped me off and left me there. I'm not really a Northeast guy, per se. So I always have a soft spot for LeBron. I don't know. This move is going to be really tough. So, but it would be kind of a picture-perfect ending, I guess, for LeBron, if he could play with his son. They're not going to win a ring.
Could be.
Come on.
No, obviously not. I mean, winning championships.
I just detest the Lakers. That's where I'm coming from. Overall, I like LeBron overall.
But, you know, winning championships may not be the most important thing at this point of his career. Because look at the amount of championships he's won.
He wants to see this dream come true. He wants to see this happen.
Yeah. So
he wants to put it up.
I mean, I could legitimately see him retiring this offseason, take a year off, and then, you know, maybe he has some sort of agreement with the Lakers to where they'll allow him to make the decision. Yeah. We don't know that.
Yeah, handshake and then minimum deal. Yep.
But we do have some NFL news that I want to go over. First off, there are a couple of rule changes. The NFL owners approved a change to the league's fair catch rule that would give the team the ball on the 25-yard line following a fair catch on a kickoff, regardless of where the fair catch is made. The league's owners and officials cited safety as a primary reason for the change, while special teams coaches and football traditionalists rage about the new rule. The kickoff play, though, does have the highest rate of concussion year after year, according to NFL executive Jeff Miller. You can't stand by and do nothing. The pop-up kickoff, which usually falls around the 10 or 15-yard line, has now officially been neutralized as a result of this. The rule change is set to expire at the end of the 2023 season. However, it could be revived if players and coaches come around on it this year. So it looks like it's just a one-year change to start off with. Which, honestly, you know, I mean, I understand why people may be pissed off about it, but ultimately, you know, every kickoff now is basically almost a touchback anyways. So why not just add this in there with you know, especially if you want to negate the possibility of a concussion.
What's the overall rule again? Steve, I'm sorry, man. What's the rule?
So basically the new rule is wherever, regardless of where you do the fair catch, like, for example, I think it's unless it's past the 25-yard line, if the ball is kicked and you're behind the 25-yard line and you signal a fair catch, the ball will be placed at the 25-yard line, regardless of where you caught it.
Well, I mean, overall, I mean, that's part of the risk and the intrigue of catching a kick, right? I mean, you got to be electric, or you got to, you know, put the. Yeah, I guess I'm in favor of that. I'm not in love with it, but I would be okay with it. Sounds like it's watering down the league a little bit. I mean, some of the best plays ever have been through, like, huge kickoff returns. So I don't know if we're getting away from violence or from what anything, but.
Yeah, but to be fair,
I mean,
at least it would make the sport a little bit safer. Because think about it, think about how many concussions we've seen over the years come off
concussions.
Specifically off of kickoffs.
I hate concussions. Yeah. So I mean, yeah. Overall, I mean, if it's for the betterment of the health of the players, yeah, I'm good for it.
Yeah,
I still think. I mean, it's a tough call. You can't change the sport, right? But you want people to be healthier. But it's like that's the risk you take. It's an inherent risk. If you're in a battle, someone's going to get dinged up. If you become a cop, you might get. If you become a soldier, someone might. If you're a pro football player, you might get. Yeah, there's parts of the job where you sign up for, but you know. Yeah, if you can help their health, then I'm all for it.
The NFL owners also passed a vote to allow Thursday night football flex scheduling, as Thursday night football had been the only primetime spot not subject to flex scheduling late in the season. So now the passed vote allows the league to manipulate all primetime games late in the season, effectively removing the potential for poor matchups. And it also seems like it's another money grab idea predicated on satiating the paying broadcast companies after Amazon purchased the rights to Thursday Night Football for $1 billion this season.
Wow.
Now, it does say while there are strict rules in place as to which teams can flex into the Thursday Night Football game, the new rule could be viewed as detrimental to the competitive integrity of the game, particularly considering the increased magnitude of late season games. So, to me, you know, this just basically is a way for them to prevent any sort of shitty matchups, essentially.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's basically what it is it's ratings driven. So I can understand where this report is coming from, that, you know, this isn't some sort of competitive I can see where the competitiveness is going to take a hit, because they could potentially. I mean, nobody pays attention to Thursday night football games, anyways. So, at least nobody paid attention this past year.
Yeah,
It does not surprise me at all, honestly.
No. No, it shouldn't be any surprise. No shocker there. It is what it is.
But this little tidbit is interesting, though, because according to Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio, it has been stated that Jimmy Garoppolo can be released from his Raiders contract without penalty this summer.
Brady's coming
well,
back.
Yeah, that.
I'm telling you.
But also, it has to do with his injury, though, because he failed his physical apparently for the Raiders.
He said injury since he was fucking negative 4 years old. I don't make joke of injuries, but come on. Jimmy's always had injury history. The Raiders knew that. Tom knows that. Tom's a smart guy. Do the math. Tom's coming back. Mid-season.
I think another potential problem, though, too, might be the fact that he's also a part owner as well with the Vegas. Well, the reason why I say that is because there might not be a lot of people that would be open to that idea of having a player also be a part owner.
They can get over it. What are they gonna do? Oh, Tom, you can't quarterback us. I mean, who's gonna say no?
Other teams in the league.
Okay. What the vote? They need a vote?
Probably, yeah.
If not, then Mark Davis can quarterback it.
I mean, they would probably need a – because okay. The vote would probably have to go in front – it would probably have to go in front of the owners.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, if he tried to scoot back up?
Yeah, like for example, if Brady were to try and suit back up, but yet he's a part owner.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, with him being a part owner of the Raiders, how do I put this? I guess you could say it kind of makes a little bit of a conflict of interest, almost. I mean, it's really tricky because I don't think there's ever been a scenario where a player has been a part owner for the team that he's been playing for.
Except in Major League Baseball.
Oh, wasn't it Major League Baseball?
Yeah. Pete Rose was, he wasn't an owner. He was a manager of the Cincinnati Reds, and he also played.
At the same time?
Yes.
Huh. Well, I guess that's different because manager, like, there is such thing as a player manager, but there's no such thing as a player owner.
Oh, okay. Then again, I don't see what the big deal is.
Well, Brady would be able to use his influence as not just being the greatest of all time, but also being an owner. I guess it would be an unfair advantage because he would also be a part owner of the team. I could see where some teams may consider it an unfair advantage that to other teams around the league that he could basically use his influence as a part owner along with him, you know, his influence that he has as a fellow player to get stuff done.
To me, I don't see what the big, what the big deal is. That's just me.
Yeah, he should be able to go back in, shoot up, throw some spirals. That's my two cents.
Yeah, it just seems odd, honestly. That first off, I didn't think that this was even possible, that we could have this sort of situation where Brady would be looking at being a potential part owner and also potentially coming back. Although he has firmly continued to admit every single time he's asked about this that there's no way he is returning to the sport. Which, honestly, you know, I kind of feel, well, to be fair, I kind of feel that if he was returning, he would have already done it by now, like he did last year.
Should have gone to Patriots.
Well, you know, I don't know about that because, I mean, yeah, I would have loved him back as a Patriot, but Patriots, do not be surprised. They might potentially be sneaky good next year with Bill O'Brien as their offensive coordinator, considering he is now fully running the team. And they said reports came out this week saying that their OTAs this week were perhaps the best that they've had since the Brady era.
Wow. And imagine if they had Hopkins, who wants to go to New England. Can they make that happen? Are you kidding me? Hall of Fame receiver.
Well,
sign him.
Yeah, you know, here's the interesting thing with Hopkins. He reportedly has a visit scheduled with the Patriots. And when it comes to money, they have the most to offer him out of any team that's interested. They have the most money remaining that they can potentially offer him. So it would not surprise me at all, especially if Belichick is that serious about wanting him. It would not surprise me at all if they can get that done, because there's a reason why they've held on to whatever money that they have right now.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
not to mention,
Bill was right all along, Steve. You know, I was banging on the table. You know me, I'm not a Patriots fan. I respect them, but that's all they need. They need a number one weapon. Hopkins is right there for the taking. Go snag him.
Well, a lot of teams also feel like he's lost a couple of steps, that he won't be nearly as impactful as he ever was anymore.
Yeah. Well. Still, I would say still, 80 catches, 1,000 yards. I'd sign up for that. Perfect possession.
Oh, easy.
Guy for Mac.
Yeah, easy. I would easily, sign up for that type of production. You know, that's the production that we thought we would possibly get out of Devontae Parker when they had acquired him. And unfortunately, of course, we ended up with the dipshit known as Patricia for our offensive coordinator, and I use that term very loosely in his situation.
Pencil ear.
Yeah, pencil ear. Yeah. Exactly. I guess. From what I've read, Mac has been absolutely perfect during the OTAs this week. And when I say perfect, I mean landing literally every single throw with somebody who actually knows how to call an offense and not missing any of his shots, basically. And also, another name to look at for the Patriots, Tyquan Thornton, the second-year wide receiver. He's making quite the bit of strides. He was looked at, believe it or not, as a number one wide receiver out of their receiver core this week.
Wow. It's impressive.
And, you know, many people believe that he was underutilized under Patricia once he officially came back from his injury. So, I mean, I would love it if they make the move for Hopkins, but if not, you know, they may be potentially sneaky good this year.
Yeah, they can.
You know, it's definitely something to keep an eye on here. But anyways, that's going to do it for us tonight on the Sports Whispers Weekly podcast. We will be back next week. Yes, there won't be another random postponement like there was last week. But join us next week, 9 p.m. Eastern. And as always, if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to the Missy AE podcast by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE, or you can subscribe at any of the major podcast networks. Thank you to everybody who joined us tonight. Thank you to Lou, Diane, Alex, and JB. And we will see you guys next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly.
Good job, Steve. Thanks.